using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
It's Friday, August the 6th, year of our Lord 2021, day 510 of America Held Hostage. Today we're going to do an Ask Me Anything. Your questions we've been collecting quite some time. Actually, it's been going back to Memorial Day since we did one of these. So we got a lot of questions to get through. We're trying to get through as many of them as we can. We'll be right back. Stay with us. And before we get into the questions, there is one issue that I've been meaning to bring up for the last couple of days, and I have so much stuff here, sometimes it gets buried. I run out of time before a segment or before the end of the show, and I've been meaning to talk about this because it's very important. One of the things that's in the infrastructure bills, I pointed out yesterday, so far from what I can see, what qualifies as an infrastructure bill, you can only total up about 25% to 33% of the grand total so far, and of course they're adding stuff all the time, that would actually look anything at all like infrastructure. So the question is, you know, what is that other three-quarters or two-thirds that's in there? And one of the things that's in there, and this has been a couple of days, again, Eric Peters was on it right away as soon as I saw it. I thought, whoa, that's a, and of course on Thursday, even Matt Drudge picked it up. And that is, they're going to mandate that every new car have a breathalyzer in it. Now, this is something that's typically not been done for anyone, mandated for anyone, unless you've got several drunk driving convictions or maybe a serious one. For somebody like me who doesn't drink at all, it is really a punch in the face that I'd have to pay for something like this. But, of course, we're all treated as criminals. And you have to prove your innocence. And this is the kind of world we're going to live in. Yesterday, there was a, I noticed on Twitter that there was, showed up on the sidebar, that Dan Rather was trending. I thought, did he die? No, he didn't die, but he is, I did confirm that he is brain dead. He put out something to the effect, well, if you don't want to be forced to take a vaccine, then I guess you ought to force the rest of us to not wear helmets when, you know, the NFL can't wear helmets and nobody can have seatbelts and that type of thing. I said, that's right, yeah. My helmet protects your head, so, you know, and my seatbelt protects you as well. So, therefore, you have to make me wear a seatbelt. It's really not any of your business if I wear a seatbelt, right? So, but this is the mindset of these people. And, of course, many of them were mightily offended by the fact that I would not embrace that. And they were all just going back and forth saying, yeah, and then maybe we wouldn't have this safety device mandated by the government or that thing or this thing mandated by the government. You look at that massive, the reason it was trending was because of just that one little tweet. And so many of these people had retweeted it and commented on it. I mean, it was like 15,000 likes or something like that. It was absolutely insane to look at these people. And, you know, and so that underscored the fact that I needed to talk about this. Besides that, of course, a big part of this bill, and we knew this was coming, was going to be things for electrification to push battery-operated cars. But, of course, Biden is also pushing for electric vehicles to make up half of all U.S. auto sales by, wait for it, what year would that be? Let's see, what year is it that they want to have the Great Reset in? What year is it that they want to have the UN 2030 Agenda for Sustainability? Oh, that's right, 2030. Yeah, 2030. They keep coming back to 2030 everywhere. We're going to ban cars completely in all these different European cities by 2030. They'd start out, they'd say 2050, 2045, 2040. Do I hear 2030? Sold for 2030. You're seeing this over and over again. And so the Biden administration is putting out new fuel economy standards to make sure that if you don't buy an electric car, they're going to do all sorts of things to make the other cars pretty much unaffordable. And then you have goals that they have for GM, Ford, for Stellantis, I guess is the way you pronounce that. This is a company that was formerly Fiat, formerly Chrysler, formerly Dodge. I mean, it's passed through so many different hands. But they want it to be between 40 and 50% electric vehicles by 2030. They say, although the president will sign an executive order, the sales target is not mandatory. No, of course not. Yeah, it's just an executive order. They'll only richly reward people who make that somehow. They'll put some money into that. The document encourages U.S. auto industry and government to promote legislation and the adoption of electrified vehicles. The order, they said, doesn't function as a mandate. And, of course, this is coming from Pete Buttigieg, so you can believe anything that the Marxist has to say. He said, the transportation sector is the biggest part of our economy, emitting greenhouse gases, and cars and trucks are one of the biggest parts of that, so we must stop them. This is all about zero, 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 zeroing out everything. You'll own nothing, zero. You will have zero COVID cases, or we'll lock you down forever. There won't be a single one in any country. We're going to lock you down. Just take a look at what's happening in Australia. Or you're not going to have any net zero you know, for your homes, or you're going to have a vision zero for automobiles. Zero deaths from automobiles. Meaning that you're going to have zero automobiles. That's kind of the equation that Bill Gates had. Yeah, well, we got all this emission, and we got all these people, and people equals emission. How do you get this to zero? Well, you got to make one of these things zero. Oh, I got it. Let's make the people zero. The Federal Fuel Economy and Emission Standards through 2026 model year will build on California's standards. That's right. And so as the Trump administration opposed those, and again, I've said many times, the only part of the Trump administration that seemed to be intact and in sync with the agenda of the Trump voters was the EPA under Scott Pruitt. And they fought these types of things. And, of course, the people who were fighting back on the other side were Ford, Honda, Volkswagen. They wanted to have the higher emission standards, higher than the Trump administration did. So you've already had Volvo, Mercedes say that they're going to be 100% electric by what date was that? Oh, yeah, 2030. It's just amazing to me. Yeah, there is no global conspiracy. They never got together and decided on a particular date that they would have all of their details, which they all agree what they want society to look like. They all agree that they want to own everything and they want us to own nothing. And they've got a specific date for it. It's not a dream. It's a plan. It's a goal. Once you put a date on it, it's a goal. And so it always comes back to 2030. Nothing suspicious about that, right? But again, all new cars will have alcohol monitors on them. A system that passively and accurately detects whether the blood alcohol concentration of a driver of a motor vehicle is equal to or greater than the blood alcohol concentration of 0.08, in which case it would lock you out. Just another expensive thing to buy and to repair. And again, it will be for all new cars, as being put out by Debbie Dingell, Michigan Democrat. Her father, in case you might remember, he was quite a bit older than I was, but boy, he was a permanent fixture in national politics with the Democrat Party, Dingell was. She said, we can't wait any longer to make our roads safe from drunk driving accidents. See, if we keep the Democrats in long enough, they will outlaw death. They will end all death, all suffering will be gone because they will have us all locked in padded cages, except that they're the ones who are crazy. She went on to say the inclusion of my bill in the bipartisan infrastructure package will help to incentivize the development and the implementation of technology to stop drunk driving once and for all, and of course to save lives. And then they've got another provision in there too, just in case that doesn't make your car safe enough. They'll have another nanny device on here that a door logic alert that reminds the drivers to check the back seat when turning off the engine. What if I don't have a back seat? I don't drive a two-seater sports car. Because you don't want to have your kid in there in a hot car, right? And they said 1,000 children have died in hot cars since 1990. 30 years. How many kids have died from the vaccines that they love and that they don't have any product liability for? There's kids that are dying from abortion every day. Not 1,000 over 30 years. No, we have between 2,000 and 3,000 a day that are being aborted. And the federal government supports that. The federal government actually has bounties out. I need a particular organ from a baby at a particular age, and I want it fresh, not frozen, and I'll pay you $18,000. How's that? And yet, they want to tell us we got to have bells and whistles in our cars to tell us that we got to check the back seat when we turn it off. So you have, this is being run through by MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. I always liked, what's the guy's name? It's Joe Bob or something. He did drive-in movie reviews, and he got in a lot of trouble even 30, 40 years ago, because when Mothers Against Drunk Driving started demanding that they put checkpoints up so that you'd have to prove that you're sober to them, stop everybody. And of course, if you turn around, that's guilt. But when they started doing that type of thing, and of course that metastasized here in Texas to having forced blood draws to prove that you're innocent. But when MAD was out there, Joe Bob said he was going to start an organization called DAMN, Drunks Against Mad Mothers. We need to revive that chapter right now. Look, I don't like to see people driving drunk. I've been in traffic court for speeding tickets, and I've watched people who had very, very high levels, especially compared to what we're seeing today. I mean, 20, 30 years ago. And seeing them walk. Multiple convictions and seeing them walk because they had a good lawyer. I don't think that should happen either. But I also don't think that we should be lowering the limit all the time, that we should be demanding that everybody have a breathalyzer, that everybody be treated as if they're an alcoholic who does this on a regular basis. I'd like to see them stop people who are driving recklessly, and I would like to see them actually take their driver's license away or do something to punish them, which I've seen them just go the other direction. They would take something like a speeding ticket a lot more seriously, I can tell you from experience, especially when you get high enough speed. Anyway, when you're by yourself, by the way, at every new car buyer will now be presumed to be drunk, says Eric Peters. The article is Joe Drunk. Senate Democrats and some Republicans have inserted language in the $1 trillion infrastructure bill to push this in. And, of course, he says when you just focus on blood alcohol content levels and you focus on, wait a minute, a test, there's no actual evidence of impairment necessary to convict. Since anyone and everyone could be sick or could be drunk, because this is like the COVID test, isn't it? It's not necessary to establish that any particular person actually is. Just wear the mask or take the jab or pay for the alcohol detector in your next new car, which, oh, by the way, will not be installed for free, not be maintained for free either. It is necessary to, here it comes again, keep everyone safe at the cost of everyone's expense and dignity. He said the Supreme Court revoked back in the 1980s the Fourth Amendment's former protections against unreasonable searches. The court interpreted the meaning of the word to be just the opposite, thereby making it legal for armed agents of the state to forcibly stop motorists without any prior reason, to suspect them of drunk driving, and to compel them to disprove the presumption of drunkenness before they could go on their way. Refusal to stop became a crime, an inversion of the tradition that forcibly stopping people who had committed no crime was itself criminal. And then eventually we get, as I pointed out, the forced blood draws. Yeah, I could go on about the cult of safety, the never-ending cult of safety. But I just want to say one thing before we take a quick break, and then we come back and get into the Ask Me Anything questions here. I saw this. I think somebody sent this to us today. Yesterday, I should say. Citizen Free Press. Trump says teasing Rand Paul over the loss. I don't know how much of a tease it is. When you look at what he had to say, and of course he's got now a press secretary who is putting this stuff out for him. Used to work for the RNC, Liz Harrington. So she's kind of his secretary at his Save America. You know, vote for Donald Trump and save America now. And so periodically you see these statements. This is the one that went out yesterday, August the 5th. And Trump said, "Do you think Rand Paul will apologize for spending nearly $1 million on another candidate in Ohio's 15th district congressional race after I had already endorsed Mike Kerry?" In any event, Mike went on to an unprecedented victory, more than doubling the second-placed finisher, and Rand's candidate came in a distant third out of 11. Rand is a different kind of guy. But, you know, actually, I like him a lot anyway. he can't win graciously, and he can never lose. And he doesn't have any friends in Washington because of this type of thing. He says, "But I'm proud to have endorsed him when he ran. Do you think he learned his lesson? Do you think Trump will ever learn any lessons in life?" You know, one of the things that I think is funny about this, and I didn't report it at the time because I don't really care about the horse race aspects. I don't really care about Trump's clout. But going back to July 28th, there were several articles about how Donald Trump's candidate lost in a U.S. House race. This is a U.S. House of Representatives race, and so was this. This particular race was in Texas. A Trump-endorsed candidate lost July 28th, lost on Tuesday, to a fellow Republican in a closely watched Texas congressional race, undermining Trump's claims that his endorsement is essential to a candidate's success and emboldening his political opponents ahead of the 2022 elections. So that's why he's got to come after Rand and taunt Rand and beat his chest, show everybody how important he is. It's absolutely pathetic. He's got a bad case of billionaire, doesn't he? The victory by Texas state legislator Jake Elzey makes Trump's endorsement look something like a new smartphone in a world of rapidly evolving technology, said an analyst for USA Today. He said, "Yeah, it still will do stuff for you, and you'd rather have it than nothing, but it's becoming more obsolete by the day." Look, Rand has done a lot of good things. I'm not happy with his stand, as I said yesterday. His statements about vaccines, you know, he's kind of tried to sit on the fence yesterday. I read your quote, where after he came after Francis Collins, who said parents should wear masks around their unvaccinated children at home. He said that's absolutely stupid, and it is. And he's come after Fauci, and I'm happy that he came after Fauci. But I'm not happy to see him tout the vaccine as something that is great and amazing. I mean, he sounds just like Trump when he does that. But look, he's also come out and said, now is the time we've got to push back. We've got to disobey these orders coming from the medical dictator. So, again, take what you can. Rand, because anybody that pushes a vaccine, I'm sorry, that takes you way down on the scale in my book. Way down on the scale. But I would give him a D+ or a C-. Would give him much higher ratings if he had spoken out when Trump was president, but he was afraid to do that. And he should have opposed this 510 days ago. As a matter of fact, it would have been good if he had opposed it before Trump did the executive order 510 days ago. But he didn't do any of that. He kind of laid there, laid back for several months after Biden became president, then came after him. And pushing the vaccines is a negative as well. But I'm glad to have somebody saying something. Nobody else in Washington is saying anything. Everybody else in Washington would get a solid F or an F minor. F minus. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Sometimes your day needs a little smoothing. Check out the Jazz Channel at APSradio.com and the APS Radio app and leave the stress behind.
All right, when is the next Q&A and when does your product line come out? Well, the next Q&A begins right now. And we've got some questions and answers even from the last time that we didn't get to it. So some of them are old, and we'll just try to still get an answer to that anyway. When does your product line come out? Well, we're kind of waiting because we really want to move a little bit away from the new California here, here in Austin. And so we're looking to move back closer to home. Meanwhile, as I've been gone, the communists have taken over North Carolina. You got Roy Cooper as governor there telling people that they're going to have a vaccine passport to do anything and stuff like that. So I'd like to be close enough to be able to see friends and family that are still back there, but I don't want to live in North Carolina. So we're looking at East Tennessee or something like that into a rural area. It was kind of nice as we visited a family who were sick back last August, and that was as the mask mandates have been on for about 2 months here in Texas. And so it was really nice to see how relaxed and laid-back people and Tennessee war. There's different areas and different places, so we're really not sure yet. But that I mentioned that because the product line, we don't want to have something that's inventory that we have to carry around. So we do have some ideas for some things that we want to do, and people have asked about mugs and things like that. But for the most part, we're going to wait until we get there. And so we've been trying to move things around. That's why we have this studio out in the garage so we can move through our living room and get it cleaned up to put it on the market. The next question here is, could you please tell me what is the opening piece of music that you use for your show? That is Liberty Fanfare by John Williams. And when I was going to be doing the show, I really was kind of concerned about using pre-recorded stuff as I had on the radio programs. And when I had the KHNC radio program, I just used the same liners and things that I had used before. But for this, I was concerned about it. So sounds like a trumpet concerto in D major, but I cannot place it. What's the title? And I may like to use that fine piece of music in a promotional video. You're more than welcome. I'll probably put up some of the I've done some music. I haven't played too much of it here. I mean, the music behind the two commercials that we run, the Fanfare for the Common Man and The Great Escape, as well as the opening music. I did all that stuff in a digital audio workstation with some samples. So we're going to do some other stuff, and I've already done some other songs that aren't as complicated, not a full orchestra. We're trying to get some music so we can have a little bit more breaks and make it flow a little bit better, so it's just not one person talking for a long time. But as I get more music, I think I might put that up on YouTube. I don't know if they'll let me or not, but maybe they will if it's just music. Maybe we might have some visuals that say thedavidknightshow.com. I don't know. We'll see what happens with that. But yeah, that's what it is. It's the Liberty Fanfare. It was written by John Williams to commemorate the 100th anniversary of the Statue of Liberty. And it's one of my favorite pieces. This is one that's a little bit older because we're talking about the upcoming mayoral election in New York City, which has already happened now. Adams won that. Thank you for your input in the midst of all the craziness in the world. I'm currently in New York, south part of Brooklyn to be exact, and I'd like to know how you feel about all the bad press about New York City. Well, I think it's deserved because of the politicians that are there. And I know that there are, you know, they don't represent everybody that's there. I mean, I've always been in a situation where I very rarely do identify with a politician that's there. But people who are looking at a city from afar kind of judge the city now anymore by what the politicians do. And, of course, now here we are several months on, and look at what de Blasio has done. And he's talking about, he's bragging about the fact that what he's doing there with vaccines, vaccine passports required to live your life, and say, yeah, we're done with the voluntary phase. Now we're going to really smack you across the head, and I'm setting this up. The rest of the country is going to follow me. So that doesn't make people feel kindly towards New York City. But I understand, as I pointed out, there's a lot of people who are pushing back against this. Business owners, some restaurant owners are pushing back against that type of thing. It's not monolithic. So the reason I ask you is I feel that since the drama with the virus started last year, people on both sides found a new use for New York, either making money off of misfortune rather than finding ways to unify. Well, that's always the case, isn't it? What do you think? Also, are you aware that Curtis Sliwa, Fernando Mateo, and Bill Pepitone, I guess is, that's the last name. I'm not sure who that is. I know Curtis Sliwa from years ago. Was it the Guardian Angels? Was that what it was? But it's basically almost like, you know, citizen patrols to help people to be safe when the crime was really high. Unfortunately, they didn't make it. This person, Candace, says Mr. Pepitone or Pepitone is the best choice in my view. I'm pro-life, not a leftist, not registered with either party. I've lived in New York for decades. Although the leadership is horrible here, I pray for New York to get better. That's very important. You should always do that wherever you live, especially. I pray the country becomes unified because historically that's how many tough battles have been won. The evil one is usually defeated when more God-fearing men and women unify and know that God's will is stronger than any rogue governor, mayor, etc. I'll keep you, your dog, and your family in my prayers. Thank you very much. And I'll just say this about Scout, because people are always asking us about that and telling us that they're praying for Scout. And I really do appreciate that, and I think that's made a huge difference. It's absolutely amazing. It was amazing to me how little skin he had on the outside of his leg, because it started necrotizing, and the doctor cut it away and did it several times, and the entire outside of his leg was just exposed muscle. I've never seen anything like that before. And also on the inside, it opened up a very, very large hole. The outside now, gradually, after it finally took hold, it started growing in. So after it got, instead of a curled edge, once it got a flat edge, it started growing back in, and now he's got a raw area that is still there. That's, I guess, about 3 inches long and about an inch wide. That is, the growth rate has slowed down, but the areas where it's grown in, he's got some areas where the skin is still gray, where it's still growing in, and the hair hasn't come back. But in other areas, the hair has already started to come back. So it is absolutely amazing, and it's just been keeping him clean, giving him good food, and you know, taking care of him, and just prayer. You know, we say we treat, but God heals. You know, we put some honey on it to help with the some raw honey to help with as an antibiotic. And even on the inside, it's started in one area to get flat and to grow in, but the other areas are still curled around. So I really do appreciate that. He means a lot to us. It's nice you know, we're all dog lovers, and it's nice to have a dog, especially a dog like Scout, when basically I'm not getting out anymore. You know, I feel like this is the year that I'm locked down. I've got to do something to get my schedule changed around here a little bit so I can get out. But it's also last year, as I did not stay home, but there were a lot of places that would not let me in because I wouldn't wear a mask. So there's kind of a, you know, that issue kind of taken away a lot of my interest in going anywhere, trying to get into any of these restaurants, even if I wanted to go. But anyway, thank you for praying for Scout. Really do appreciate that. As I said, it is God who heals, and we give him the glory, and we thank you for praying. This is the next question is a little bit unusual. This was Mia, who says that she and I think my mother and I have been doing a project, a big art installation that we'd like to put in, called Pearl Pathos, about greed, war, and negative force brainwashing human life. And so they're asking in this question, they're in the Northeast, they're afraid of the COVID reset, of the vaccine passports, etc. Yes, you should be. We want to move, but we don't know where. It costs a lot to move this because of the size of this thing. We're only familiar with New York and South Florida, but both of those are expensive. New York, again, is not a safe option. Could you recommend a place to look to moving where we can live with sane, moral, God-fearing people and finish the work? Yes, I would say Appalachia somewhere. that's I don't know myself, or I would be there already. But again, I would look for it. That's exactly what you want to look for. You want to look for a place where people are going to be, first of all, you want to get away from big cities, and you want to make sure that and you can kind of get a feel for what the community is like, the most of it by seeing some of the politicians and the types of people that they elect, even though you can't trust the politicians. That kind of gives you a feel for what the population is like. That would be my best guess to you. Again, the places that we're thinking of are kind of Eastern Tennessee, because Virginia's been taken over, and North Carolina's been taken over by the Marxists. I'm worried about Georgia, because you look at what's happened there. Stacey Abrams you know, they're the very, very hardcore Marxist base that's there. So it's kind of hit or miss in different areas. I mean, even when you go to Florida, there are areas of Florida that are very urban and very developed. I would never think of moving back to Tampa, for example. Strategic relocation you might take a look at that and... Joel Skousen was talking about Florida and saying, you know, that's always been a place that he would not recommend because of the lines of escape in case things get bad. You know, it's kind of a bottleneck, long lines to get out of there. But if you get up into the Panhandle area, it's still kind of conservative. I guess it was about 3 or 4 years ago my wife and I went back. And that seemed like Tampa when I was growing up, so... that's just my general impressions. And, of course, if you're up there, then you don't have the problems of being way down in the peninsula trying to get out. I'm listening to your AMA right now. So this is an older one, a couple of months ago. And I just wanted to say thank you for what you do. Here's my suggestion. I heard you talking about show sponsors and paywalls during the AMA. And I thought if you haven't heard of the Value for Value model, you might should check it out. And he talks about what Adam Curry is doing. I've talked to Adam Curry and Mark Hall, who I've interviewed several times about his film, Killing Ed. Mark Hall is a friend, and he knows Adam Curry. Adam Curry is a friend of his as well. And so it was last December, I guess within about a week after I was fired, he got us together so I could talk to Adam Curry. But I'm still kind of fuzzy as to exactly how it works. And I was concerned because in order for people to, in order for it to work, you have to use cryptocurrency. And I really wasn't sure if a lot of people would be comfortable doing that. And so I'm still looking at it. I haven't ruled it out. And I am familiar with it somewhat. Next question from Matt. I'm not sure if the Ask You Anything is going to be a regular thing, but I'd love to hear your views on what really happened on 9/11. I never really wanted to believe that our government could be responsible for such a thing, growing up in New York and New Jersey. But the lockdown has made me realize it's very possible. Please talk about this on a future show. My understanding of it, and I've talked about this, I think that it is what we've seen this last year, as I mentioned on a regular basis, dark winter, the anthrax attack, and the Model State Health Emergency Power Act, that all was a part of this just as much as the Department of Homeland Security and things like that, the war on terror that came out of it. But, you know, the other aspect of it was what we've now just, what they rehearsed for 20 years that we just lived through this last year. And for me, it was kind of interesting. You know, I never did have a great deal of confidence in the government, but I didn't realize for a while what had actually happened. We didn't even have television hooked up at the time. We had moved to a rural area where we didn't get any broadcast television. So I was getting phone calls from relatives who did. And they were saying, oh, this is, the whole thing fell down. And I'm envisioning it as kind of toppling over, which you would expect, instead of just coming down in its footprint like a controlled demolition. And I didn't see that for a couple of years, actually. And when I saw that, it's like, ooh, you know. And, of course, Trump knew right away and even said that right away. But then he kind of ignores that. Hanging out with Rudy Giuliani, who did a great deal to cover that up, exposed a lot of people to toxic levels of dust because they were in such a hurry to get that covered up. It cost a lot more lives. People are still dying from that. So, you know, it is when you look at what has happened with 9/11 and the many different aspects of that, whether it's the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Truth, or whether it is the architects and engineers who say that can't, that would not happen. Three buildings falling in the footprint like a controlled demolition when only two of them are even hit by a plane. Why didn't they change any of the building codes? Because you'd had a skyscraper that had been hit by a plane, the Empire State Building, somewhere like back in the 1930s or something like that. So it was not unexpected. And they didn't change any of the firefighting procedures. They didn't change any of the inspection procedures. Nobody was sued for not doing the architecture right. You had pilots for 9/11 Truth saying you can't fly those planes at that speed, that slow. So I don't know what happened. A lot of people have very, very strong feelings that they think they know exactly what happened, that it was a directed energy weapon or this or that. I don't know how they took it down. All I know is that the conspiracy theory and what the government has given you is a conspiracy theory. It's their theory about what happened. And what they're telling you is that it's more than one person involved. It wasn't a lone pilot. You know, it wasn't Lee Harvey Oswald flying one plane. And so since you have more than one person involved, it is a conspiracy. Since they don't have anything that makes any sense in their particular narrative, it is a theory. It is a conspiracy theory. And so I think that the way we approach this is to say, well, I don't know what happened exactly, but I know that their story isn't true. And I know that they also piled on to plan a lot of stuff that has happened. And again, practice for 20 years to do what they've just done to us this last year in conjunction with that. So that should be the thing that tells us that something is fishy here. And there's a lot of different details, and of course you can see it. And Jason Burmes did Loose Change, and Alex produced that as well, gave him money to do that. That's a good documentary. It raises a lot of legitimate questions. I've said this before, down in a Texas kind of vacation area, Karen and I were driving just, you know, on a weekend, taking the time off. We went into a shop, and it was kind of a knick-knack shop, a lot of Christmas stuff, and I was not interested in walking around and looking at stuff. So I kind of stood by the door, and I was reading the news on my phone, and Karen was looking around, and the person who owned the store wanted to talk. It was so dead, she was desperate to talk to somebody. So she just starts monologuing to me, telling me about her career in the military and how she'd retired. And she gets to the point where she starts saying, you know, I was with a group that was looking at all this missing. There was trillions of dollars missing out of the Pentagon. And we had very powerful people in Washington that were taking early retirement so they didn't, get criminally prosecuted and everything. She said, And then my husband had to leave because of health issues, and I retired, and I got out of there, and just a couple months later, that's exactly where the plane went through, that office there. You know, can you believe that? It's like, yeah, and I wanted to. I had put my phone in my pocket, and I wanted to get it out and just start recording her, but I knew that if I did that, she would stop. But she never caught on to it. You know, it's interesting. You can have people who, my wife Karen is from New York, and she had a cousin who actually worked in the World Trade Center and was there that day on a lower floor and got out. And, you know, just being there doesn't give you any better insight as to what's going on. Sometimes it might make it even harder for you to figure out what's going on, because it's so visceral and it's up so close, you can't really see the bigger picture. And that certainly was the way it was with this woman. I asked her, I said, you know, where do you get your news from? And that kind of explained it. She was getting missed information. She wasn't getting the full story. But, yeah, it's there's so much that could be said about 9/11. I could go on and on. But I think the key thing for us to understand now is how it was tied to 2020, tied to this lockdown pandemic. Let's see. Next one. How are you doing? I was just curious why your shows are now shorter. I liked listening to your shows for a couple of hours. This is probably an old one from when I was doing KHNC for the third hour, and that's one of the reasons why we stopped doing that radio show. I really liked the people at KHNC. They were very nice to me. It turns out that in order for, well, because of the time slot that was available, I had to do it at the time that we were doing the third hour. And so that meant that it was a little bit difficult for us to do the transition. We had to cut it short. We had some issues the way that we connected. I wasn't happy with the sound quality. And for it to work, and this is the thing, for me to go from this model to a different one, if I were to go to being sponsored by ads, I've had a lot of people been very kind and say, yeah, I'd like to sell my product on your show. I haven't really decided what to do about that. I'm not really sure what even to ask in terms of a price. And if I make that jump, then it's a completely different model. When we started doing the radio show, I think people thought we were making money off the radio show. And we had a big drop in contributions there. But then, you know, I told everybody what was going on, and it came back up. And we went back to a three-hour thing. So for it to work on radio, I think we'd have to do a pre-recorded show, give it to them in segments, and have a lot of different radio stations. Because all these small radio stations that would typically we would want to be on, that are not part of the big, you know, there's big corporations that have bought most of the big power radio stations. But there's still a lot of independent radio stations out there, and it's good to have those, and it's good to support them. But I think we would have to have a lot of those for it to be worthwhile, because it's not any one of these stations that is going to be able to come up with some kind of a revenue stream to support the program. And because they're just not making much money. Most of these stations are just on a shoestring budget. And so yeah, we're back now, back to 3 hours, and happy to do that. I just got off work, says Jason, and I'm catching your June the 4th broadcast. Again, you know, this is going back a couple of months ago. I'm particularly interested in the continued ban on evictions for people who are not paying rent. Does this apply to my property tax as well? No, of course not. Of course it doesn't. They will still evict you for your property taxes and take your home. And they're eventually, I believe, going to take people's property away from them and turn it over to the banks. That's what I'm concerned about with this. But nevertheless, even if that doesn't happen, the fact that they could override private property rights and that it could be done by the CDC, that's the amazing thing to me. It was allowed by Trump. He didn't say a word. Rand Paul didn't say a word. None of the Republicans said anything about the CDC doing it at the time. And then they extended it Still silence, crickets. Then Biden gets in, he extends it a couple of times, and now he's done it, I think, a third time. And all this time it's going on, you had people challenging it in court and winning. And then the most annoying thing was what happened about a month ago when it went to the Supreme Court. Kavanaugh says, along with four other judges, they don't have the legal authority to do it. Of course they don't. And then he says, but I'm going to let them do it for another month because they said they'd do it for another month and then stop. And then, of course, they decided they won't because they got a lot of political pressure from their people. But, yeah, is it going to apply for people who can't afford to pay the property tax? You better believe it isn't. It's just like when you look at health care, for example, Obamacare. We've got to help people, so we're going to make it more affordable, right? Well, of course, it didn't make it more affordable. But I've said all along that if health care is important, and it is important, then let me spend the money myself before I send it to you. So I should be able to get a 100% credit for my health insurance that I buy for myself. And I've said the same thing about education, too. When I was with the Libertarian Party in North Carolina, what we did was we said, what can we do to wean people off of the government schools and to give them choice at the same time? And I said, well, it's not enough to do a tax credit because a lot of people don't have enough income that's really going to help them. So why don't we do this? Why don't we give anybody a tax credit if you will give a scholarship, for example, to some kid? So you could pay tuition for your grandkid, or you could pay it for a total stranger in a poor family, and you'd get a tax credit for it. You should be able to. We understand education is very important. We understand that health care is very important. So therefore, let me do those things before I send my money to you. But see, it's never about really helping people. It's about making them dependent on the politicians. And that's what they're always about. So he says, does this apply to my property taxes? Well, my city just did a random assessment of my home, and my property tax went up considerably. Next year, I'll have to pay nearly 10% of my annual salary just to stay in the house that I already own, which is why, as I said yesterday, you never own your home. You're renting it from the government, but they want to make us rent it completely all the time. He says, this is on top of the 20% plus I pay in regular taxes and the 8% sales tax in Georgia on all the products that I buy. It's getting to be unsustainable to be a productive member of society. That's the plan. And they want to make sure you can't afford a car either, as I was just talking about at the beginning of the program. Can I just not pay my property tax and still stay in my home? No, afraid not. The government will get its pound of flesh there, won't they? David, longtime listener, I just bought a butcher shop in a small community in northern Minnesota. My current girlfriend of 7 years is worried because she knows how unwilling I am to bow to health officials, and the possibility of what's going to happen to meat processing at this point is endless. And one hang-up that always comes back is this. We have organized a small militia, roughly 200 people, but if they decide to revoke my license because I will never get vaccinated, I obviously won't. He says, if they take my license, if a farmer calls me and needs to come and get ahead, I'm still going to do it regardless. But now let's say that the SWAT comes along with some health officials and they show up and they want to arrest me. Do I go willingly or do I fight? Because I will assure you, every inch of my being tells me to fight until I'm dead. Well, let me tell you what God says in the Bible. If possible, as much as it depends on you, live peaceably with other people. So try to avoid a direct confrontation. And I would say you also want to try to avoid the use of force, because once you do that, you're playing their game. And they've been rehearsing ways to kill you and other people for a very long time. So that's kind of like, if you want to fight a war, do it asymmetrically, right? If you're going to be fighting the British Army in 1776, you don't want to line up and shoot them like two long lines of firing squads. What you want to do is you want to get behind the trees and the bushes and the stone walls and shoot at them, you know, that type of thing. What I'm saying is that you want to try to work things out that force is their tactic, their strategy. So do something different. Do civil disobedience. Do underground economy. If you got 200 people, by the way, don't call yourself a militia, because that's going to, I know that's a legitimate term. And I hate to allow them to set the terms. But, you know, you can talk about the militia in terms of a term, in terms of what it is and constitutionally and historically what it's been. But once you start labeling yourself as a militia, then they can, you know, that allows them to put a label on you and call you something that you aren't, okay, which is a violent threat to somebody. So don't be a violent threat to them. But if you got 200 people, do the type of thing that Ammon Bundy is doing. As a matter of fact, you could use their website even. Peoplesrights.org. I'm getting a little bit fuzzy here. I think it was peoplesrights.org. But it was Ammon Bundy who set it up. So if that's not the right title, you can look it up under his name. But basically, it's a decentralized thing. He doesn't want to run it as a centralized thing. But it's just a way for people in a community to get to know each other and to set up a quick notification scenario. So that's what it is. Good. Thank you, Travis. It is peoplesrights.org, I think. But the bottom line is that if you have a situation like that, if they do show up with that kind of, you try to stall them, but also call, and you have a bunch of people show up, and now you got everybody there filming, everybody there watching, and that can be something that turns the tide in your favor. They've had some good responses and good results with that in terms of medical kidnapping and hospitals and other things. So having a lot of people who are committed and having a, you know, if you will, a Minuteman response that is going to be asymmetric. They're not going to necessarily show up and start shooting at the SWAT team from the bushes, but they're going to show up and start shooting the SWAT team with their cameras and put them online, and that's a very intimidating thing for them, and it's a way to make them behave. And so there's other things that we can do besides directly getting violent with people. So we have to think about how we're going to react. But the key thing is to try to make sure that you are looking at this from a Christian standpoint, because understand, one day you're going to stand before God, you're going to have to answer for this, and you don't want to have a situation where you have escalated violence or started something like that. So just think about it from that perspective. Another person says, this is Mark. And he says, one question I didn't ask last time was about personal finances. As you know, the banks pay nothing for interest other than a checking account and emergency fund. I don't keep my money in the bank. Anyway, I have most of my assets in Vanguard mutual funds. Oh, you're going to be owning all the homes everywhere because they're buying them up left and right. Warren Buffett says, never invest in something you don't understand. Mutual funds, one of the few things that I understand, has a decent return, so I've been investing there. What should one do about the future, though? Bitcoin will be taken out at some point, and the government is taking the first steps to doing that. Also, Bitcoin has the same problems that gold and silver have, plus another one. You can't physically possess it. What are the problems I see with gold and silver? Well, one, it's a speculative investment. Two, it pays no dividends or interest. It provides no income. Three, it has to be stored. Four, government can confiscate it, and they have in the past, as FDR did in 1933. Well, I'll just say this. I'm not an investment advisor, and as Karen says, anybody who wants to ask me questions or advice about making money, not investing money, you're asking the wrong person based on my history here. So I would also tell you that that government rigs all markets. Yeah, they have confiscated gold in the past, and they have, they're working at how they can confiscate Bitcoin, as I pointed out, taking down, just immediately taking down the people who are doing Bitcoin mining in China is a good example of where these people will go. They could take down the internet. They could take down miners by themselves. They desperately want to have a central bank digital currency. That's really where they want to go. So if you understand that that's a big threat, there's two big threats. One of them is hyperinflation, and then the other one is the hyperinflation is coming about because of the massive debt and money printing. And once they do that to intentionally destroy the existing monetary system, they want to replace it then with their central bank digital cash. So what do you do about that? That's one of the reasons why I think physical things like gold and silver are useful. I think when you look at what to do, again, the government can steal whatever it wishes if it sets its mind to it. And the government can rig any market and has. So what do we do about it? You know, I think we need to be good stewards of the money that we have, but we need to not obsess about it. You know, again, going back to the Bible, you know, I was young, but now I'm old. But I've never seen the righteous forsaken. I've never seen their children begging for bread. So you have to have a certain distance from it so that it doesn't possess you, right? You don't want to make your possessions possess you. You want to hold them loosely. You want to be a good steward, and that's what you're talking about here. I don't have any particular advice. You lay out all the different problems, including you talk about going back to Roman times and how copper was a precious metal, you say. And then they started debasing that overnight, and they can do that with anything. How do you preserve your wealth? Well, I would just say store it for yourself, treasure in heaven, where the thieves' government cannot take it. seriously, I mean, that's, anything that we have here is temporary. And just understand that. Try to do the best you can to be a good steward, but understand that your real security is not in the things that you own, but in who owns you, right? And so you want to make sure you're owned by God and not by the devil and not owned by your money. That's the key thing. My name is Jack. I actually met you briefly at the Kinston rally. You may recall I was a guy with a handlebar mustache. Yes. Nice to meet you. Anyway, he said, first discovered you on InfoWars. Appreciate your objective libertarian perspective. I agree. I have two questions for you. One, I want to ask you about something I heard on your show. You mentioned a German professor, scientist, who came out with a report stating the mRNA vaccine delivery mechanism did indeed go inside the cell nucleus and modify the DNA. You also mentioned a Japanese leaked Pfizer report stating the same thing. I would like to look this up and verify this for myself. Where did you see this? I would. One of the things that we need to do is we need to get back to where I can put articles up so I can refer back to stuff like that. It's hard for me to even go back and find some of this stuff. I'll tell you, I went back when I saw this question. I looked at these questions briefly just before we did this for preparation. For the most part, when we had questions, I asked Karen to just put them all in a document. But then I read through these quickly before, so I would have things like this available. I'll tell you where some of these articles are. This is one going back to April the 8th, and it comes from Children's Health Defense, and which is RFK Jr.'s site. Could mRNA vaccines permanently alter DNA? Recent science suggests that they might. And so that's one article that gets into how this is modifying things. But then there was also an article that there was some research that came out more recently than that. Let me see where this article is here. And it was from Thomas Jefferson University. It's a small private university. Here it is. Discovery identifies a highly efficient human reverse transcriptase that can write RNA sequences into DNA. Because this is, as they point out, a long-held dogma in biology that RNA only copies DNA, but it doesn't alter it. And so these people discovered that, no, it actually can and does. And it is they had an excellent experiment where they illustrated this very simply. This is a very small university. They don't have a big budget. They're not a big-name university. And I said when this came out, this was the middle of June, I said, if these guys can figure this out, don't you think the NIH knows this? Don't you think that Francis Collins and these other people know that precisely? So, yes, the mRNA can modify your DNA. They documented that it does. And that is one aspect of it. The other thing, the one about the leak that came out of Japan about the Pfizer documents, this was something. Well, there were a couple of leaks. Number one, there was a leak out of the European Medicines Association, the EMA, which is like their FDA. And in that particular document, what they found in that was that there was concern about the integrity of the mRNA molecules and some of the COVID-19 vaccines. And this goes back to last December when they were getting uneven quality control. And so they were looking at this and saying, well, you know, some of these vaccines that we get are not going to work because they don't have enough of the mRNA in it from their perspective. Now, it could go the other way. You could actually get a higher concentration of it, right? If you got bad quality control, you can have too much or too little of whatever it is that you're trying to do. So that was a worrying thing. But the key thing was the information that came out of Japan, and it was talked about by a Canadian scientist. His name is Bridal, and you can find this article at LifeSite. Here's the title of that one. Vaccine researcher admits the big mistake, says spike protein is dangerous toxin. And so, again, you look up his name, Bridal. There's several articles that LifeSite did interviewing him because he got in a lot of trouble when he told people what the Japanese research showed. And so it wasn't just the fact that they were starting to discover that the spike protein was the dangerous thing and that they're going to make your body manufacture the spike protein. But the research that came out of Japan was about biodistribution. The idea being that you inject a vaccine into somebody's shoulder muscle and it's supposed to kind of stay on site. And instead, these mRNA vaccines, they found out in the Japanese study about biodistribution. They found that it very quickly, rapidly got in the bloodstream and spread throughout the entire body, and then started the spike proteins started collecting in organs everywhere and passing across the blood-brain barrier. So that's a key study right there. The biodistribution aspect of it, the concentration quality control aspect of it, and then the experiments showing that the dogma that it could not alter your DNA, you hear this all the time from them, that's not true. So I hope that answers your question. I need to, again, do articles so I can refer people back to it. I prefer having stuff in an article because then I can reference it as well, and instead of just doing it verbally, and it makes it a little bit easier for people to find it. The reason we're not doing it is we just are spread too thin doing the news on a regular basis. That site that I did have, roundtablereport.com, it was the same thing that I'm seeing right now, and I complained about that to Alex because, of course, it's very difficult. As much content that goes up and comes down on InfoWars, it was difficult for anything to persist very long in the first place. But the second place, they had, for the longest time, they reorganized the website. They had two different areas. So you'd have, like, the breaking news, and you have special reports, and so get put on special reports that people wouldn't typically click on that tab. And then it would get buried, you know. It would very seldom see anything. So I said, I'd like to have something where I put up an article a day, and I think that would help people to, you know, get an overview of what's in the video, but also give me a chance to give them a little bit more detail. I did write some specific articles that were not about a video report that I did. Problem was, and the reason we're not using Roundtable Report, still have that domain name. I did get that turned over because they didn't value it very much. I could not believe their website could be this poor. The website they put up and they would not fix it. I could not even boldface any text. I could only put in one picture per article. It was ridiculous. Ridiculous, the restrictions on it in this day and age for a WordPress document. So we just wanted to get something that was going to be a little bit more usable and could format text. So we haven't done anything with that yet because we haven't really done anything with the website. We just have a splash page there. So, but I hope that helps. Those are the questions. He said, second question is something I wish I had the chance to discuss with you in Kingston. You were so swamped with fans. I was hoping to discuss topics with you. Didn't want to impose beyond my initial greeting with you. I would love to call into the show to ask, but again, that's another thing that we haven't really, don't have the way to set that up right now. But in the meantime, I'll pose it to you here. Would be very interesting to hear your question. The question is this: why do you continue to assume that a novel virus called COVID-19 or SARS-CoV-2 exists at all, despite there being absolutely no evidence of it. Ike is the only person that David Ike is the only person that I've heard who steadfastly asserts that COVID does not exist and has said it from day one a year ago, and that makes the most sense to this day. The most popular theory that you and Jones continue to insist is true is that the bioweapon that came from the gain-of-function research out of Wuhan lab and then intentionally released to the world theory. However, this theory is so obviously false, it is actually absurd and an obvious red herring. So he goes on, with some analogies. And so let me just say this. Here's my answer. First of all, when this all began and people started to talk about this back in December, I said at the time what was really absurd was the narrative that it was coming from a bat, you know, and the wet market. I said that's nonsense, especially as soon as I saw the Wuhan lab there, their only biosafety level 4 lab that was there. I said, well, okay. if it's real, that's what it is. But I also said from the very beginning, as they showed pictures of people that were just falling down in the street, remember that? As they showed pictures of the crowded hospitals, I said, this is China. Everything in China is crowded. Everything is, I wouldn't be surprised if that wasn't the normal conditions for a hospital. But I said, that looked really phony, these people dropping in the streets. This whole thing looks like a setup to me. And I said, regardless, the worst case scenario, take the worst case scenario, that this is gain of function and it's deliberately released and it's very toxic. The worst thing we could do would be to do a lockdown. It would cripple us in terms of food production, medical care, everything else. And that's exactly what it did do. And so I talked about the lab and I said, that's a possibility. And yet, when InfoWars went really hard on it, I didn't want to go that way because I said, look, the dangerous thing, the really dangerous thing, no matter what this is, and we didn't know. We really didn't know at that time. But I said the most dangerous thing is the tactic that they're using to deal with it. And I still say and have said over the entire year that the real virus, the real pandemic, is this response to all of this stuff. So that was what I wanted to focus on. Now, Francis Boyle was somebody that Alex had on all the time. Francis Boyle, Mike Adams, they were pushing this bioweapon stuff very hard. Francis Boyle has worked for a long time for the biowarfare convention to try to restrict this stuff. He's very well aware of the dangers of this. I was well aware of it going back to 2014 and had talked about that extensively. And so we're both concerned about that, and we both like to see that shut down. But again, I was pushing back on that. If you go back and look at those archives, you'll see that I was taking a different approach to that. You know, it's like, let's watch out for whatever this is, but we know what the lockdown is going to do to us. Once we give up these freedoms, it's going to be pretty much impossible to get them back. To the extent that Alex even had me on with Francis Boyle and Alex, and so that I could kind of debate Francis Boyle. I didn't want to debate gain-of-function research, but I didn't believe that this is a dangerous thing. Francis Boyle kept saying, everybody's going to die from this and so forth. And I disagreed with that, and so he would always begin by addressing me with all due respect to David Knight, which is another way of saying, well, bless her heart. There is no due respect when somebody says with all due respect every time they address you. So they were not too happy with what I was saying. They did not have John Rappaport, somebody who from the very beginning has not believed this is authentic at all. From the very beginning, John Rappaport said, well, I think if we're seeing anything real in China, in Wuhan, that what we're seeing there is a reaction to extremely bad air pollution that's been there for, been a chronic problem for them, and maybe they're just blaming the problems with their air pollution on that. He's also been a part of the group who said, well, we'd like to see an isolate of that. And they keep saying, well, we can't give that to you. We don't have that or whatever. Well, that looks suspicious. And it does look suspicious. But let me say this. It's the same thing about 9/11. People want me to say, well, exactly what happened with 9/11? Exactly who did it? I can't say. I can't say that there is no virus. I can't prove that it doesn't exist. Right? You can't prove a negative. You really can't. What you can do, and what I've tried to do, is to take their numbers and to show that their numbers are lies, to show that they have lied with this same pattern, the same MO, over and over again every year to try to push flu vaccines. It's the same tactic, the same strategy that they've used, the same lies that they've used with testing and with inflated numbers and so forth, just like they do with unemployment, just like they do with inflation figures and all these numbers that come out of the government. You know, the federal government lies just like the Chinese government lies. And so I think what we want to do is we want to expose the information that they put out there. We want to expose the VAERS. We want to show what the vaccine is about. We want to expose, and that's what I tried to focus on, were the bogus numbers coming out of the CDC. And I think, showing how they're twisting the statistics, showing how they're twisting the science, how they're telling people to wear masks, and we know that the masks don't work, and we've got studies that show that the masks don't work. I can't prove that the virus doesn't exist. And I just like I can't prove that there's something magnetic going on in somebody's arms. And I know that a lot of people are very convinced of that. I'm not going to try to use those things. So, you know, if David Icke wants to use that, if he can prove that something does not exist, I don't know how you do that logically if you stop and think about it, right? There's a lot of atheists who will say, well, I don't call myself an atheist because I can't prove that God doesn't exist. I can just say that I haven't seen God or I don't know God or whatever, right? That's the tact that they'll say. They'll say, I'm an agnostic, which is Greek for ignoramus. not poking fun at agnostics, but I'm just saying, you know, it's A means the, you know, it's a negation, right? Like atheist, I don't believe in God, atheist. And agnostic, agnostic, gnostis means that you know. So it just says, I don't know, in the Greek. The bottom line is that you logically can't disprove, you can't prove that something does not exist. And so that's why I don't do that. I can prove that what they're doing is not science. I can prove that it is medical malpractice. I can prove that they're lying with numbers. And that's what I want to focus on because I want to try to minimize the damage. And I can also prove that everything that they've done is unconstitutional and is going to make our life a living hell. And it's something that they plan to do for decades. I can prove all of that. And so I'm going to stick to what I can prove. Hello, David. I'm a newer listener of your podcast. I thought I was awake until I started listening to your show. Now I feel my wife and I are more awake than ever. We knew something was fishy about Trump after listening to your show. It all came together. My question is, what are your thoughts on flat Earth? I've heard all the arguments and still believe that we're on a globe, while my wife is convinced that the Earth is flat. I told her I'm going to settle this once and for all. I'm going to ask David Knight. Well, there you go. I'll give you my opinion, and that'll be the absolute truth. I don't believe that the Earth, first of all, why would anybody lie to us about that? What is the objective? So whenever somebody wants to challenge something like that and say, well, it's a lie, they're challenging, what's in it for them to tell us that the Earth is round instead of flat? That's the first question I would have. You know, who benefits from that? And why would they do that? The second thing is that I taught myself trigonometry. I didn't like the new math trig, and I didn't take much math when I was in high school, and so I had to catch up in order to when I started engineering. So I had to really jump on it, and so I was able to find a used textbook from the Naval Academy that was all word problems and so forth, but it was set up for people who were doing navigation on the sea. And people who were doing ballistics, you know, shooting cannons and stuff. And it was back in the 1940s where they were still doing a lot of the calculations themselves instead of having computers do it for them. And so it was about spherical trig. Spherical trig is different from planar, right? Because the angles don't always add up to 180 degrees. But it works. And so that's one of the reasons why I don't believe that the Earth is flat. The other reason is I don't know why anybody would say that and benefit from it. So anyway, that's my opinion about it. But I don't, you know, don't want to cause any disagreements between you and your wife. So y'all don't argue about that. There's going to be plenty of other problems that come up. I'm sure you're aware of the dual citizens in Congress and probably other government appointments and offices. My question is, do you think dual citizens can adequately represent U.S. interests and its citizens while also being beholden to a foreign nation? No. Emphatically, no. I would say the poster child for all this is Vindman. That'd be Lieutenant Colonel Vindman to you, right? Yeah, he clearly is serving a different agenda and so forth. I don't like the whole idea of divided loyalties. I don't care what citizen they are of another country. I don't think that's a good idea. It happens a lot in the military, a lot. Let's see. This person says, I enjoyed your last Q&A session. Here's my question. As we seem to collectively begin to lift the veil, under many topics and under much duress, we still see that many topics are still taboo, namely 9/11. Yeah, we're back to 9/11. In the current discourse, despite widespread Trumpism, 9/11 has eluded discourse, and the Overton window maintains. That's right. And that was one of the things that I didn't really think it would happen, but, you know, there was always a little bit of a hope there because, you know, it was clear from the recordings that were made the day of that Trump immediately knew that it was nonsense. He was sitting there watching it. It's like, well, it really looked like a controlled demolition, didn't it? And that's a really strong building. And they tried to take that thing out once before by blowing it up at the foundation. That's where the building is really vulnerable. You know, he knew it, right? And the fact that he wouldn't release any of that stuff is an early clue, along with the personnel that he put in the administration. Those are both clues that he wasn't who he said he was, right? Simply, I'd like your take on financiers such as Francois Gannot and others as well that maintain ties to generational Nazi wealth, ideology, technological advancement. It is little known the depth and breadth that went beyond Operation Paperclip, the links to which our government went to procure top-flight Nazis and their ideologies. As a matter of fact, I would recommend a book by Annie Jacobson about Operation Paperclip. That's the name of the book. She did excellent research on that. She did a really good book on DARPA as well, the Jason scientists and so forth. Very well researched, very detailed. An excellent read, both of those books. So I'd highly recommend those books to anybody. Operation Paperclip, and I think it was, the other one was just called DARPA, but it's also about the Jason scientists. But Annie Jacobson is the author. Francois Gannot, if I'm pronouncing the name correctly, he was a Swiss spy intelligence agent. He bankrolled the Nazis shortly before he died. He always said, believed in, Hitler was a great guy. I think if the Nazis had won, the world would be a better place, all of this stuff, right? But I think the most interesting thing about him that I know, I don't know a great deal about him, but I think the most interesting thing is that he gave a lot of money to the radical left and the communists. He gave a lot of money to Jean-Paul Sartre. He gave money to Noam Chomsky and these other people. So this whole paradigm that, you know, we have these people on the left, the extreme left, the communists, and that's going to be Stalin and Mao over there, and then we got Adolf Hitler over here on the extreme right, and they're polar opposites of each other. As I've said many times, I think a better political map is not a one-dimensional map, you know, like this, where you're looking at it on the edge, and it's just a straight line. But I think it's if this is a square, and let's make this a little bit of a square, and if you make this a square, and you make it a graph, and you say along one axis you've got personal freedom, and on the other one you've got economic freedom, or vice versa, and you start mapping that out, and then if you rotate it by 45 degrees, you find that down here at the bottom, where there is no economic or personal freedom, that's kind of an authoritarian area. And then up at the top where you have both freedoms, you could call that a libertarian area. In the middle, you know, you've got, if you got economic freedom, it's kind of in at the time that David Nolan put it together, the left was typically known for supporting civil liberties, which they don't anymore. Okay, so that's a problem with mapping these types of things out. The left no longer really occupies the traditional left, which would be on one side. I've got this backwards or whatever. But if you rotate this 45 degrees, you wind up with left and right and center, and then you wind up with the libertarians at the top and the authoritarians at the bottom, and you find that the people who are the communists, is, you know, living under authoritarian communism, is not all that much different than living under authoritarian Nazism. You know, they've all got their enemies and they treat them the same way. They might have different enemies and they will have a different justification for how they come into power. You know, they will make economically, the fascist will, you know, control private companies without taking them over, whereas the communists will take them over at the beginning. And that's one of the things Hitler said. He says, I'm going to wait till the very end, and then these guys know how to run the stuff and make the trains run on time. And so I'm going to wait with that. So, you know, it's they're really more like each other than you would expect. And that's the thing that I think is interesting about that particular guy, the fact that even though he loved the Nazis still called themselves socialists, didn't they? They were nationalist socialists as opposed to the internationalist socialists. But they all wanted to have everything under some maximum leader where you had no individual liberties. And so he's perfectly fine giving money to the radical left. They can make an allowance with that. Anyway, if you want to know about those connections to Nazis, I think the best connection to the Nazis is what we see happening with Klaus Schwab, what we see happening with Prince Bernhard and the Bilderberg Group and that type of thing, just the EU in general. As far as I'm concerned, that is the tactic to the Third Reich, what they've done to give Germany control over Europe. Next question. Listening to you every morning is a breath of fresh air in the time that we live in. Well, thank you. That being said, I have some questions that I hope you will consider answering. Number one, what do you think of natural diet-based cancer treatments? I've heard a lot of buzz about this issue on alternative health sources. I've also heard stories of doctors promoting this, being found dead under mysterious circumstances, so obviously someone doesn't want this information to be public. Well, clearly, these people are... If big pharmaceutical companies are willing to allow people to die because they don't want to cure a disease or die because they want to push out vaccines without any liability because they can make a lot of money, obviously they would kill an individual who does something like that. So, I would just say that I would not rule out any natural diet-based cancer treatments, but I don't have any evidence of any that I know of. It's not something that I've really focused on. So that's really all I can tell you about that. Two, regarding InfoWars, what is your opinion on Owen Schroyer and Harrison Smith? When I used to watch InfoWars regularly, they were my favorite hosts. To me, they seem more even-keeled, less focused on viral moments than Alex and so on. I'm not going to say anything about any individuals because I don't have any, first of all, we should all be very careful about gossiping about any individuals. So I don't have anything to say about any individuals. I will say I will talk about them when they're doing something that I think is their position on issues, or if they do something that is going to be harmful to the general public, that is, I believe, wrong in terms of what they're telling people. I will absolutely talk about that. I have no qualms about talking about Alex when he misleads people with a Stop the Steal. And the January 6th stuff. I think that was horrific. But I'm not going to talk about him individually, his particular life. And that's the next question here. I found this New York Times article a few months ago, supposedly written by an ex-employee at InfoWars. And that's the one they linked to it that Josh Owens wrote. And I know Josh Owens. Josh and I did several different trips together. As a matter of fact, he was a cameraman there with me at the Bundy Ranch. And Josh had been in some of the contests and so forth, and he was not hired as a reporter, but he was hired as a cameraman. He did great camera work. He did great editing, very fast. And he was libertarian in his orientation. I think two things happened. The Trump cheerleading that happened, becoming Trump sycophants, was something that didn't set well with him, just like it didn't set well with me. He also had, from what I understand, although I didn't know her, his girlfriend was, I think, more liberal than Josh had been. I think that moved him a little bit politically. I'm not sure about that. And I don't know about all the different things that he said in the article about them being true. You know, I would just say sometimes, you know, a lot of the stuff that was there I had seen, but there were some things that he talked about that I had not seen because he was, again, traveling more with Alex as a cameraman that I didn't travel with him. I would just say that sometimes truth is stranger than fiction. I know you've I know you've briefly discussed it before, but how exactly do you define libertarian, and how is it different from libertarian? Well, I just wanted to come up with something. You know, for the longest time, when I got involved in it back in the 1980s, nobody understood what libertarian meant. And, you know, I remember one guy who wanted to run. He was a motivational speaker, and he wanted to run for president on the Libertarian Party ticket because I guess he figured that was going to give him some press exposure to help his business or something. And his father, he had his father come and speak. And his father, when he got up to the podium, he referred to it as the Librarian Party. And I had all these people used to think that we were liberals and other things like that. When I ran for Congress, people thought the Natural Law Party, which was really about transcendental meditation, they had a cult up in the mountains of North Carolina. They called themselves the Flying, other people called them the Flying Swamis because they'd cross their legs and they would hop, you know. And they ran a full slate of congressional candidates in North Carolina because they were able to get on the ballot. If you get on the ballot, you could run somebody in every office. And so their proposal was that they were going to get people elected to political office and get everybody doing transcendental meditation, and that was going to bring peace on earth and that type of thing. And I was in a TV debate with one of them and the Democrat candidate, because the Republican candidate in a Republican district did not want to debate. She was a shoo-in, and so she could only lose. She would be punching down if she got into a debate, so she didn't show up. So it was the three of us. It was a Democrat who was the sacrificial lamb of the Democrat Party. I was the sacrificial lamb of the Libertarian Party. And then there was this lady. First question was, what do you think about vouchers? And, of course, it was about educational vouchers because people were talking about trying to kind of privatize things like that. She had absolutely no clue what they were talking about at all. No clue. She didn't know anything about anything other than transcendental meditation. But the reason I bring that up is because they called themselves the Natural Law Party, and people thought they were the libertarians. They thought we were liberals. So I wanted to make it clear, especially because the Libertarian Party, capital L, libertarian, has drifted away from liberty significantly. If you look at what happened last year, where Joe Jorgensen, who I knew Joe, and she had been the running mate for Harry Brown, one of the times that he ran twice. She was running mate for him. And I was just appalled that she set out pretty much the entire summer clueless about what a violation of liberty, all these lockdowns and everything else, the medical dictatorship was. That was just a lost opportunity that she didn't jump on. So I wanted to make it clear when I set up that Twitter account that I was supporting liberty. So that's why I put it in there, libertarian instead of libertarian. Finally, I'd like to know what your current politicians you agree with the most. Also, what past political figures do you most admire? Well, I would say of all the people that are there right now, I think the most centered and candid and libertarian, liberty-oriented candidate is Thomas Massie out of Kentucky. He's been pretty solid, and he had the guts to oppose this massive CARES Act and stimulus bill that Trump and the other Republicans and the Democrats all put through. And if you remember, he got called out pretty hard for Trump. I'm not saying Thomas Massie is great because he opposed Trump. I'm just saying there weren't any Republicans that would oppose Trump, not even now, really. And Thomas Massie stood on principle. So I think he's head and shoulders above everybody else out of Kentucky right now. What past political figures do you most admire? Well, I mean, there's a lot that you could say about a lot of the different presidents. I guess that's usually what people most think about. I think we've had some really good presidents. I think the person that I would agree with the most would be Jefferson. He did everything he could to limit the size of government. He reduced government. He eliminated all internal taxes, and he was very proud of that. And he did that by downsizing government. I mean, that, you know, there's a lot to be said for that. He apparently was not a Christian, and a lot of people were afraid that he was going to confiscate their Bibles and so forth, and that's why he wrote the letter to the Danbury Baptist. They wrote a letter to him, and he responded to them and said, no, I'm not going to come and attack your religion. There is a wall of separation, and what he meant was that wall was around the government, not around the people who were Christians, and then we've inverted that whole process now in the middle of the 20th century. But he was against the central bank. He was against the Supreme Court having judicial supremacy. He got a lot of stuff right in terms of politics. And you've had other presidents who've done good things here and there. I think Teddy Roosevelt did some good things. I think he was a genuine guy. I think he was honest. I think he was mistaken on some issues as well. And so that's the way it is with a lot of the presidents. But, I mean, there are presidents like Woodrow Wilson that I would absolutely oppose, presidents like Lincoln that I would absolutely oppose. Just think that they're absolutely horrible. And then most of the presidents in my lifetime, because I know more about them than I do the other presidents. But in terms of other political figures, you know, if we think even outside of the U.S., I think one of my favorite political figures would be William Wilberforce, who was wealthy, and he was already a member of Parliament and very well educated, and he became a Christian, and he knew John Newton, who wrote Amazing Grace. John Newton, after his life as both a slave trader and a transporter and sea captain and everything, at one point in time, he actually, through a series of events, he became a slave himself. But then he became a Christian, and he was a pastor, a little bit older than Wilberforce. And so when Wilberforce became a Christian, he started talking to him about resigning from Parliament, and Newton told him, he said, well, God has put you in this position, and there's probably something that you could do there that might be different or more important, that not everybody needs to be a pastor. And so William Wilberforce made it his life's work to get rid of slavery. And if you realize how important that was and how difficult a task that was, I should say, that was like opposing the military-industrial complex and Big Pharma and all the rest of them, right? That was the big money in society at that point in time. But he made it his life's work, and first he stopped the slave trade, and then before he died, they actually ended slavery. And the way the British did it was they actually compensated people in the Caribbean for the slaves, so you didn't wind up with a civil war, and they spent less money buying the slaves away and, you know, compensating the slave owners for their financial loss. They spent less money than the North spent on ammunition to kill people. See, that's why if you think about things, there are probably solutions that don't involve violence, just as I was saying with the earlier answer. I live on a lake on a pretty secluded piece of property. We have water, wildlife, good Christian neighbors, and plenty of supplies. Well, that's great. You're in a good position. Two-part question. Should I be moving away from the dollar? What is the best way to start a large area with small number of people in a neighborhood protection watch? So much land, so few people, but we're close and we share views. Just looking for some other way to protect our lives and our neighbors' lives. Stockpiling food doesn't seem to be enough anymore. I'm praying for your dog. Yes, thank you. And my best thoughts, wishes, and prayers to you and your wife, family, Scout. Hope you could help me figure this out a little bit better. They're in Alabama. Well, I would say it sounds like you're in a really good position. If you've got good neighbors and you're just trying to figure out how to organize things, I had him on for a special Saturday event. Travis, what is the Jack Lawson's book? It's kind of a generic title of the two. What's the title? Civil Defense Manual. CivilDefenseManual.com. You can see some free chapters there. A chapter on how to make sure that you've got water and so forth, but you said you've got water that's there. But a lot of different things about how to prepare food and how to store food that's very economical and everything. But he also has, as somebody who's had military experience himself, and he's also worked with people who have who are experts in communications or organization or defensive military-type tactics. It's a two-volume book, and it's just a wealth of information. Now, one of the things that he says is, setting up a neighborhood protection watch, and you don't want to call it a militia. You want to keep it kind of informal. I guess the person that I know that's done the best job of this, and I haven't really done a good job of this myself, but a person that I know that is here, had moved from the Northeast, from New Jersey, actually, and they were in kind of a rural area, but they were still concerned because of the general population density and the general orientation of people being very left-wing, up in the Northeast, as we all know. So he wanted to get to Texas, and he moved into an area, and this guy is an ex-Marine, and so he is looking very carefully at even the lines of access and entry into the subdivision. And it's like, well, I know that, and he looked at it, he's like, I know that I can drop a tree across this and stop people from getting in. I mean, he's thinking about things very seriously, working on growing his own food, but he's also established contact with his neighbors, because you don't want to do this on your own. And one of the things that he did was, and they probably, they've got maybe a 2-3 acre neighborhood where everybody's got 2 or 3 acres. So it's not as rural as this sounds like. But I would suggest that you get some kind of a radio that doesn't have to go through the internet or go through the cell phone service, because that's what he did in his neighborhood. And they just have some walkie-talkies. That walkie-talkies can have a pretty long range. And so if you're in a neighborhood, a walkie-talkie might do it for some like-minded neighbors. And he's talked to other neighbors. Some of the neighbors he's not going to approach, and others he will. There will be people that he can depend on. And if something, if anarchy breaks out or whatever. So that's just something to think about. And, I'd work on your lines of communication. It's one of the things that you didn't mention. And there's a lot of great sage advice in that Civil Defense Manual. Now you find it at civildefensemanual.com. I would recommend that highly. I've had him on to talk about it a couple of times. Next question. Wouldn't all the humans living in protective places like foster care, group homes, nursing homes, extended care automatically be given the shot since they have no voice to say no? Even those who humans taken away from family by DHS, etc. Yeah, that's true. And that's, that's a concern for all of us. I have an aunt who is 96, and I spent probably an hour and a half just repeating over and over again, trying to explain to her not to take the vaccine. I didn't get into any details about anything about it or why not to take it. I said, just listen to me. Don't take it. Don't take it. And it was really hard to get through. So I know she's very vulnerable to that type of thing. They may not even ask her. If they do ask her, she may just wind up going along with them. I don't know. So that's a real concern. I don't know really what else we can do about that. How do you think they will roll out the microchip in the forehead and the right hand? Talking about a mark of the beast type of thing. I don't know. I think when we look at what is happening right now, and as I said yesterday, when you look at what de Blasio is doing, Reason Magazine, libertarian secular magazine, said, well, this looks kind of like having to have something. We've always said in Western civilization, we disregard, we kind of were leery of having to have something in order to buy and sell and live your life. And it's like what they were doing was describing the mark of the beast without actually calling it that. And that's the thing about this, right? A lot of people say, well, is it something that you have to voluntarily take or whatever? Is it going to be, what is the mark, right? Is it going to be some kind of a tattoo? Is it going to be something physical? Is the mark a scratch? Some people said it's a scratch, so maybe it's the vaccine. But then the Bible says, you know, the right hand or the forehead. Is that literal, for example? Some people say, well, you know, as God says, I will put my laws in their mind and I will write the laws in their hearts. And so that's a certain understanding that, you know, God is not literally writing it on your heart, right? So do we understand that as literal mark? Or is this, as some people have suggested, maybe this is the world system that is imprinted on your mind and on what you do, you know, your hand in your head or something? That's allegorical understanding of it. But either way, however you understand that, understand that what they're talking about now with this vaccine passport is fundamentally like that, right? It is saying that we are going to set up something that is a, and it's going to be done worldwide, and it will, whatever this is, you will, if this isn't the mark of the beast, this is training for the mark of the beast, or you could call it the mark of the beast, but it's what the Bible described in terms of you will have to do X or have X or whatever in order to live your life. And so that's what I think we ought to be concerned about. And I think we ought to literally treat it as if that's what it is right now. Not say, well, you know, something else is coming, or this is training for something else that's coming. No, we stop this right now because one way or the other, just from a political standpoint, even from a secular political standpoint, this is antithetical to everything that our country is about, everything the Constitution, the Bill of Rights is about, everything. This will destroy every aspect of individual liberty, and we have to oppose it. We must oppose that. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be right back with some more of your questions. Stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Elvis.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
And the sweet sounds of Motown. Find them on the Oldies channel at APSradio.com.
All right, and we're back with more questions and hopefully some answers. I have a question. Do you think that it is fair to say that Alex Jones was done in by Trump? In other words, Trump took him out. Even though he's still on and in operation, etc., he's been discredited several other times. Jones was discredited by me even before Trump. And if Trump comes back, he will still do more harm than any, if good, Anita. Well, I think that what has happened is that, what InfoWars has become is the antithesis of what it used to be and what it was when I went there. It was nonpartisan, skeptical of both sides, understanding what was happening with 9/11, where the globalists wanted to go, and all of that was set aside so that we could cheer one individual. And, I think that was the wrong approach to take. And, I tried to support Trump when he did the right thing, or was leaning toward the right thing. I would try to push Alex to do that. But, of course, it became clear that he wasn't interested in any of that at all. I mean, it was very disturbing from the very beginning. The people that he put in the cabinet, the way he turned his back on Julian Assange, the way he turned his back on Alex, for example, on free speech. And I said at the time when that happened back in August of 2018. These politicians who were pushing censorship, not just Trump, but also Marco Rubio, and of course all of the Democrats, is eventually going to blow back on them. But it will blow back on the Republicans first. But, you know, they wanted to go with this line, which they're still pushing out, the Heritage Foundation, Cato Institute, the conservative libertarian think tanks are saying that corporate censorship is just fine. They should be able to steal anything from us that they want. And again, no, the purpose of government is to, it's not just that government is not supposed to take away our free speech, not supposed to take away our property without due process or whatever, but it's supposed to protect us from people who would steal from us, whether it's, a guy with a mask and a gun freelancing, or whether it's some of the biggest corporations the world's ever seen taking our God-given liberties. That's their responsibility to protect that. And no, you don't get a pass to ignore that. But then it got worse last year, of course, as I've talked about that many times. So, no, I don't think that Trump is going to fix anything if he comes back. Hello, David. I've been listening to your show every day now. You mentioned that you're going to do a day this week coming up of listener questions that we can email you. If it's okay, I have a few questions. Was JFK a good president? And did he try to abolish the Federal Reserve to replace it with a silver standard? If he had lived, would he have tried to pass the socialist Medicare and Medicaid? He seemed like a true conservative, our last real conservative president. Well, I would just say that I was pretty young when JFK was there. My impressions of JFK, my family was, my dad was a Goldwater libertarian. Only bumper sticker ever put on his car. But of course, Goldwater was after JFK. He was up against LBJ, who was a genuine monster by all accounts, people on the left and the right, as well as Richard Nixon. People on the left and right hated both of those characters. Anyway, the when you look at JFK, my impression of him as a child was kind of shaped by the Cuban Missile Crisis, which happened the year before he was assassinated. So it was beginning of me being in second grade. Scared me to death because they had to take an extra set of clothes. I mean, I was close enough, and you know, we had neighborhood schools at the time. I walked to school. And, it was a very short walk. And yet, this is going to be coming so fast that you're going to have a change of clothes. Why do you need to have a change of clothes if it's a nuclear war? I don't know. Why would you have a duck and cover drill where you stick your head in the desk if it's going to be a nuclear war? And none of that stuff made, but it sure scared me when I was in second grade. Looking back at it, I and my classmates in a few years were looking at this and say, what in the world were they doing to us, And this is what I worry about now, the fear that's been instilled in these kids about this virus. The threat of nuclear war was a real deal. And these kids don't have any threat from this virus. Not even in their most vivid CDC imagination can they come up with a threat to children from this virus. And any of this pandemic stuff. So, but it does have an effect, and that's going to have a big effect on them. So that was, the first thing was the Cuban Missile Crisis, and then the next year he was assassinated. And, my take on it was, wow, yeah, this guy really nearly got us blown up, because I was living in Florida, so they were saying, get here in no time at all. So my take on it was, this guy nearly, ended the world in a fiery death last year. But as I started looking at it, my opinion of JFK changed over the years. And, I could see how he was opposing what the CIA was doing, how he was opposing what the Federal Reserve was doing, how he had the biggest tax cuts of anybody until Ronald Reagan, and how both the tax cuts of JFK and of Ronald Reagan helped the economy because taxes are a drag economically. Yeah, they're a real drag, man. But economically, they drag the economy down. And so, you know, it's good. And he was the one who said, you know, rising tide lifts all boats. This is a Democrat who supported tax cuts. And so there's a lot of different aspects to JFK. You know, there's the philandering aspect of him, you know, the Marilyn Monroe aspect. And his dad, Joe Kennedy, was an absolute gangster who made his money during Prohibition. So you look at some of that and the connections with the mafia. I don't know. But I think he had, again, you know, we don't... I don't like to sort historical figures, presidents and things like that, by their personal lives, because you can't really know all of that. Shouldn't really try to judge that, but just try to take a look at some of the policies that they did. Yeah, he did get it started in Vietnam, but he seemed to be somewhat reluctant about that as well. It was really LBJ who pushed that in there. So, yeah, from a history standpoint, you know, he was... one of the better presidents that we've had in my lifetime, I think. Have you ever heard of Ralph Efferson? No. Ralph comes to the conclusion that our founding fathers were not good men, that they were Illuminati Satanists, according to a documentary called America's Secret Destiny, free on YouTube, a couple of hours long. Well, you know, here's the deal. I think that you know them by their fruit. And regardless of what their personal beliefs were. Like I said, I think Thomas Jefferson was an excellent president, even though his version, you know, he wanted to reject anything that was supernatural in the Bible. So he had his Jefferson Bible where he had cut out anything that he thought was referring to something that was supernatural. That was one of the things that scared people about him at the time, because America was a very Christian country. And I would just say that... a lot of the people who try to say, well, the founders were bad guys, they were Masons, or they're Illuminatis, or they're Satanists, the motivation they have to do that is to say that America wasn't a Christian country. Let me tell you, America was a Christian country whether or not the presidents were Christian. You can see people like Abraham Lincoln, who his wife bragged about the fact that he never went to church, even after he died, said that. But he used a lot of rhetoric that was very Christian. Why? Because the nation was Christian. Its culture was Christian, not just its religion. It was the basis of how they approached law, how they approached culture. It was steeped in Christianity. And so people, even if they weren't believers themselves, they also understood that culture, and they were influenced by it. That's really the issue when we're talking about America being a Christian nation. And I think when you start talking about the founders, oh, they're a bunch of demonic Illuminati or whatever, I think that is just an attempt to discredit the Christian roots of America that flowed up from the grassroots to the top. Didn't the problem in this country start with Hamilton? Do the American system of economics that turned into the Whig Party, then turned into the Republican Party? Well, I think Hamilton was the most statist of all of the founding fathers. Perhaps that's why they did that musical that I haven't seen. Have you ever read the book Hamilton's Curse? No. The Real Lincoln? No. Lincoln Unmasked? Yes, I did read that. All that opened up my eyes to what was the start of our problems in this country. And he talks about the Civil War. I would also say that if you really want a good history of the Civil War, you should read Shelby Foote's History of the Civil War. He was a guy that Ken Burns drew on somewhat. I think he had Shelby Foote on for the anecdotes and for his accent. He had a southern accent, heavy southern accent. But Shelby Foote's got a 3-volume history of the Civil War, absolutely the best that you'll find. And so, yeah, in terms of Lincoln, I mean, Harry Turtledove writes alternative history, and some of it's good and some of it's not very good. There was one that I thought was good about the Civil War. It's just a single book by itself. It's called How Few Remain. And it starts with the premise, what if I'm trying to remember which battle it was, one of the early battles where Lee gives battle plans to a courier on a horse, and the guy drops it, and it falls into enemy hands. And it's really bothering me. I can't remember which battle it was. Anyway, what if that hadn't happened, right? Just a simple little turn like that. Where he drops it, some guy, hey, you dropped that piece of paper. Oh, yeah, I wouldn't want that to fall into enemy hands. And so he rolls the whole thing out with that. And what happens is that, you know, that seminal battle that did not go well for the South, you know, that if because they found the battle plans, that it goes the other way, and they have an early termination. And so in his alternative history, you have a lot of these figures that were killed during the battle, individuals like Stonewall Jackson, who died in the Civil War. He survives the Civil War because it ends early, and all these different things, and he kind of imagines, you know, what would have happened with the South if, with it being split, would they have extended to the West and down into Mexico, because that's what Jefferson Davis had envisioned. And so he kind of goes with that. And he has, the Confederate cavalry fighting engines out in the West on camels, because that was another thing. There were little snippets that he actually picked up. You know, they were Jefferson Davis, when he was head of the War Department, which was what the Defense Department used to be called. He had speculated about that. Yeah, you know, it'd be kind of a good thing if we had camels. You know, it'd be kind of useful out west. And so he put a lot of stuff in there. But the reason I mention that is because he envisioned, with Lincoln losing the war early with that change in the battle, that Lincoln was thoroughly discredited because nobody likes a loser. And so he was kind of in a political wilderness for a few decades until he came back to life as leader of the Socialist Party. Now, yeah, that's that's very believable. I think that's probably where he would have been. So much for alternative history. Then a question about universal basic income. Unemployment, $300 extra a week. Many Republican states, including one Democrat state, Louisiana, have totally stopped the federal unemployment, along with the $300 extra per week. Biden recently said, basically, he's going to let the unemployment, along with the $300 extra a week, to expire in September. Do you really see this ending by Biden in September? No. Or is he going to extend the unemployment again? Yes. Along the lines of $300 extra a week. I think so, because that gets you about $1,200 a month, which is what they were floating around with a universal basic income. And look, folks, they don't care anymore about the deficit. I mean, Trump got us over that, didn't he? Yeah. $3 trillion here, another $2 trillion there. You know, $6 trillion the last, you know, not even a full year. And it's absolutely insane. When you look back at January of 2019, as I pointed out many times, people were saying, you know, the federal government's going to have a deficit of $900 billion. That's nearly $1 trillion. And then 2020, we had a deficit of, you know, Trump just dropped $6 trillion. That's why I say, you know, Thomas Massie is the only one who spoke up and opposed that. Oh, and Trump wanted to get rid of him in the worst way because of that. So we don't worry about the deficit anymore. When you saw the Democrats all running, they were all had, you know, several $1 trillion here for this thing and several $1 trillion over there for that free thing. And, of course, universal basic income was a part of that, because universal basic income serves two purposes. It turns the country into a communist orientation where you don't have a job, you don't have a business, you don't own anything. And you're happier because they cut you a check every month and they keep you from coming after them with a guillotine, as Bloomberg said. They know exactly what they're doing. That's why Elon Musk and Bloomberg and all these people in Silicon Valley supported universal basic income. That's why they gave millions of dollars to Andrew Yang to popularize the idea. AOC, Occasional Cortex. They were doing this stuff and everybody was saying, these people are crazy, radical communists. And then it was Donald Trump who actually did it. And now they're going to make it more frequent, and then they're going to lock this thing in, and they're talking about that. So I really do think that's going to be the case. Have you ever heard of William Cooper? What'd you think of him? And I had a couple of people ask me this. You know, he had a back and forth with Alex Jones, and honestly, I've not looked into it. I know that, you know, he eventually died in a standoff at his place, and everybody that I've seen that asked me about it, thank the world of William Cooper. Right now, folks, we're in the middle of a communist globalist takeover with a Mark of the Beast system. And so, you know, it's not something that I got into before, like I had gotten into 9/11. So, and again, 9/11 is wrapped up into what is happening right now. But it's just not something that I have gone back to. Here's another person asking if I could do another show on 9/11. It'd be interesting, especially how the Bush administration lied. That's from Frank. Yeah, I might try to get on some more and get, you know, a little bit more information from the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Truth, Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. I think it's important that we not forget that, because that was a key turning point in the history of this country. And again, intricately tied into what has been imposed on us this last year. Let's see. I would like to see a debate with you and Alex Jones about Trump and any other issues you disagree on. I think it'd be entertaining, educational, and I think it would help you to get some closure on everything that happened when you were at InfoWars. Well, I would just say this. There's not going to be any debating with Alex Jones. You know, he what he did was he took Piers Morgan up a notch when he went with Piers Morgan. You know, Piers Morgan, I watched Piers Morgan go after people that were very knowledgeable and articulate, like Larry Pratt, and he would just shout and talk over them and wouldn't let Pratt finish anything. And the only person who could do that better was Alex Jones, who did that to Piers Morgan. And that's what, you know, that's there's not going to be a debate with Alex Jones. As I mentioned in my comment on your video, Trump finally mentions Ashley Babbitt 6 months later. I'm really disappointed that you've chosen to support the deep state's account of the alleged Babbitt shooting when I provided you with irrefutable proof that she was not shot in my email of June the 25th. And there was a link to a video and link to this here. And I've seen the video, and I'm just going to say that every time something happens, and, you know, no matter how suspicious something is, no matter how much there are agent provocateurs or whatever, since Sandy Hook, everything that happens, we're told, it was faked. It was all crisis actors. We heard that about the Sutherland, Texas church shooting. We heard that about Las Vegas. As a matter of fact, it was Steve Pachinik who tried to dump that on me. I don't believe that Las Vegas was a legitimate thing, but I also believe that people got shot. And so, again, going back to the whole thing about, you know, say that there's no virus. I can't prove a negative. I can't prove what happened on 9/11. I know that what we've been told about 9/11 is not true. I know what we've been told about the plandemic is not true. I know that there were agent provocateurs on January the 6th. As a matter of fact, I said that leading up to it. I even said it the morning of, if you go back and look. Now, the basic argument of this video is that she was shot in the neck, but they didn't see enough blood. I don't know. I'm just not going to say when she's got friends and family who are absolutely, you know, are very angry about this. I'm not going to take them on. I can't prove any of this. I see your suspicions here, but I'm not going to do that. My question is, when do you think it'll be time to leave everything behind and flee to the mountains? Well, maybe yesterday. when you see the eagles gathering, you'll know it's time to get out of town. Some Bible scholars say that Matthew 24 was fulfilled around 70 AD when Rome invaded Judea. However, most Christians believe the scripture is a dual prophecy with a second application of the end times. With Earth's weakening magnetic field, with the sun getting hotter and hotter, with all of the chaos in the world today, I would say it's a matter of how and when, not if, this entire man-made system, which is based on electricity, will go down. All of us have had the luxury of flicking a switch to turn on the lights our whole lives. We've never had to make tools, build things, hunt, fish, forage, gather, start fires, etc. Nor do any of us know how to do these things. We have been trained to live and thrive in an artificial, godless system that has taken us away from our connection with nature. We have learned skills that, when this system does collapse, will be proven to be worthless and detrimental. Oh, I absolutely agree with everything that you said there. That we are, I think all of us, even the most prepared among us, have some real vulnerability in that area. So I absolutely agree. None of us knows what types of plants are edible, poisonous, or medicinal. Whatever event triggers a total collapse of this system, a sun flare, a war, a pole reversal, whatever, who knows, who will know how to survive? What will life be like during that time? Is now the time for us to forget about our worldly possessions and start learning how to live like our ancestors did? Sorry if this is not the type of question you expected, but it's one that has been on my mind a lot these days. I just closed our restaurant, partly because the economy in the Philippines is already decimated from COVID lockdowns, but mostly because my spirit tells me that now is not the time to be pursuing business. I have an unmistakable alarm inside of me, telling me to get ready and to learn and to teach my family how to survive what I believe is inevitable. What do you say? I had an article that I was going to read. I think it was on Wednesday. I didn't get to it. And it was something that I kind of enjoyed. It was from Reason Magazine. And the guy was talking about, here's a great family project. Build your own gun, you know, from lower thirds. The 80% lower. And talking about, and went through detail of the kit that they had used. He said, I've only done it once, so I don't know if this is good compared to other ones. So it's not a review. I'm just telling you what my experience is. But he had a teenage son that was doing it. He says, it's going to be really interesting when he tells the class what he did over the summer. Well, I hope he doesn't wind up having problems with his son getting kicked out or with CPS showing up at the door or something like that. That's the kind of world we live in. But I think it's appropriate to do kind of a Sarah Connors training event for your kids and for yourself. I'm serious. You know, this is the type of times that we live in. Our entire infrastructure is incredibly fragile. I had Jack Lawson, who wrote the books that I talked about earlier, a Civil Defense Manual. I had him on to talk about that in light of what was breaking down in South Africa. He spent some time in neighboring Zimbabwe and when it was Rhodesia, and he was part of the defense forces there as the Marxists were moving in. And as he pointed out, as you see in South Africa and as we see in America and as we've seen even this last winter in Texas when we lost power because they had they're busting the power grid. But we have a very, very fragile infrastructure, and it doesn't take much to break it. Everything is just-in-time delivery. It isn't like people are even storing up stuff and manufacturing it ahead of time. They get the reports late at night as to what their customers want, and then they make the stuff overnight and then deliver it just in time, so nobody's got any inventory for stuff. And so it's a very, very complicated infrastructure that has a lot of links that are dependent on the power grid, that are dependent on transportation. Transportation is one of the key issues if you look at how products just like food are delivered. All the different processes where it goes from the farm to this processing area, to another processing area, to another one, and then distributed to the different grocery stores and on, and you picking it up. So anything that disrupts transportation, and that's where these little gremlins in federal government are now going to be focused, and that is going to be in disrupting transportation, making fuel very expensive. You know, the very first thing that Biden did when he came in was to try to get rid of fuel resources, the Keystone Pipeline and other things, but many things like that that they're focused on to try to shut down the availability of cheap, affordable power. And, of course, it doesn't have anything to do with pollution because you can make any of these energy sources clean, and you can do that more quickly and more efficiently and for less money than you can go and switch to an entirely different power generation source and to take down the existing coal plants or natural gas plants or whatever and put up something that is windmills. It's much, and batteries, you know, to do all that stuff. It's much easier to make the existing plants cleaner than to go that way. But so they're looking at, again, breaking the grid, and there are so many different things that could be done. That could be accidental, as he's pointing out. You know, it could be an EMP pulse. It could be, some kind of a solar flare. It could be war. It could be deliberate sabotage. It could be deliberate Green New Deal, shutting everything down. Because, you know, you're just going to kill everything. All life on Earth is going to die if you've got air conditioning, that type of thing. So, you know, what do we do about this? Well, you know, it began by talking about the Bible, and I think that's really where this all goes. We do what we can to try to prepare, and we should start to learn how to take care of ourselves. And I think that we're going to be forced to do that because of this vaccine passport. This isn't the sort of thing where you look at it and say, well, you know, I think that it would be wise, because we have a fragile infrastructure, to learn how to do some of these things for ourselves, how to survive on our own, how to grow our own food, how to fix some of our own stuff and make some of our own, things. We could say that we would do that because it's something that would be wise to do to protect ourselves from a fragile infrastructure. But most of us aren't going to take the time to do that. I think it's going to happen because they're going to push us out of their system if we don't get vaccinated. And so I see that as something that is, in a way, God's providence for us to force us into this. If I can't go to the big box retailer and get whatever I need from them, I have to start learning how to make connections with people locally to do the things that I'm not able to do, and to start learning how to do things myself, to start developing skills that I can barter with and work with other people. They're going to start pushing us into a parallel society, and I think that's good, and I think that's coming from God. And so again, you know, we don't know what the future holds, as they say, the old saying says, but we do know who holds the future. So it may be a difficult time, but always in the past, in my life and in the people's lives that I've known, difficult times have been good times of spiritual growth, of family relationships and things like that. If we train to fight dragons, and as Doug Wilson says, then we should not be upset when we see the dragons come, because that's what we've been fighting for. That's what we've been training for. And so start training for that aspect of it. Hello, David. I'm Matt, 36 years old in South Carolina, and I first want to thank you for your hard work. I became an avid listener at InfoWars. I hardly knew anything about you till that time. I now trust you more than any other. Thank you. I'm going to skip over the compliments here and try to get to the question. I do appreciate the compliments, and I do read them. I'm just not comfortable reading them out loud. After echoing your VAERS data information, Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, right, from the CDC, and numbers to others who wish to push the vaccine on social media, I'm often asked to provide a link to the data I convey. I never use your name, but direct those people who question it to the CDC tutorial on how to search VAERS Wonder System data, which really puts you through the hoops to come up with tangible data. I'm of a strong belief that you and or your team put in some hard work to comb through, interpret, and compile tangible results in regards to injuries, serious injuries, and deaths. Any tips or shortcuts you could point us towards to help wake up those who believe their severe case of Stockholm Syndrome renders them woke? Well, let me say to you that I haven't taken the time to go through and total up all the different ones, because it's so many of them. I mean, we're looking at about nearly 500 adverse events and about 12,000 reported deaths. But these figures that I'm coming up with are from trusted sources who have done that. Children's Health Defense Fund has lived in this VAERS database, because the VAERS database goes back to the child vaccine programs where Fauci gave the companies immunity from being sued back in 1986. And so they set this thing up then, and Children's Health Defense Fund has been going through this and doing it honestly for a very long time. And so they have a lot of that data. There's also Vaccine Impact will frequently put up, when they talk about individual cases, they will give you the actual VAERS number so you can look it up yourself and get that information. So those are two sources that are secondary sources, not the direct sources of VAERS, because as you point out, they do a great deal. They can make it hard to find that. There's also other databases. Besides the American CDC database, there's also a database that's being kept in the UK and another one for the EU. The EU database only has 27 nations, however, which is only about half of the European Union countries, and it is huge. They've had about 1.5 million adverse effects. About half of those, again, are very serious. And they've had about 18 or 19,000, somewhere in that range, reported deaths. And so all of these are independent databases that are kind of tracking along. And then, of course, there's also the lawyer who has filed suit. He says, based on an anonymous whistleblower source, it says that there's another database that the CDC keeps track of. And in that database, he said it shows 45,000 people died within, it's either 24 or 48 hours. I can't remember which one it was. I'd like to see more information about that. I reported what he had to say, but again, I haven't been able to verify that myself because this is supposedly coming from, a separate set of books, if you will, that they keep. I don't have any shortcut tips to point that through you except to tell you that there are some trusted data sources that are putting that stuff through with some documentation. And I just have to say that even if you looked, even without looking at the total numbers, if you just looked at the individual cases that are reported by the Children's Health Defense Fund or by the Vaccine Impact, where they actually have the VAERS number there, if you just looked at that alone, then I think that if just with those cases and a few dozen cases that they have focused on, that's enough that they should have stopped this program, quite frankly, that they would have stopped this program and any other therapeutic or vaccine in the past. I mean, they're going after the Boeing 737, and they're coming after them for more violations and so forth. They are very, very careful about safety everywhere. I mean, we're going to have new cars. We're going to have breathalyzers. Why are they so unconcerned about safety with this? Why is this the only industry that gets a pass on hurting people? That's a hard stop right there. That the legal immunity that the pharmaceutical companies have for these vaccines, the legal immunity makes me an anti-vaxxer. I'm not interested in talking to anybody about any vaccine until you take away their product liability immunity. There's no other industry that has that. No industry should have that. That is evidence of political corruption. And it is an incentive for them to be reckless in order to make money. And that's exactly what we're seeing right now. I mean, that in and of itself is the end of the story. That makes me an anti-vaxxer. So you want me to stop being an anti-vaxxer? Well, the first thing you're going to have to do before I even consider looking at anything else is to get rid of that immunity that you give them for hurting people. Especially in regard to the numbers of severe cases, Stockholm Syndrome renders them woke, especially in regards to the numbers from the VAERS system. Okay, so that's the rest of that question. Recently, my phone service shut me off because it would not service my old cellular phone. I went to Walmart, and not even the flip phones are GPS tracking and hooked into Google. I've got two choices now, it seems, Google or Apple. What can I do? What can anyone do? I just want a phone. Not an information lab, a communication device, or would say a Big Brother listening device. And to boot, they make the flip phone like 30 points higher on the IQ test in order to work. A lot more complicated. Thanks. if you look at what happened, what just was released Thursday night, you see that Apple is talking about the new release. A new release is going to be pushed out to iPhones. I don't know how far back in terms of iPhone models are going to do this, but they're going to put something in there to look for child porn on phones. Now, that raises a couple of different problems. I don't support the use of child porn, okay? I don't support the use of recreational drugs either, but I don't support the drug war because I've seen what Prohibition did with alcohol. I've seen what Prohibition has done for the last 50 years with the drug war. I've seen how it's destroyed the Constitution. It's corrupted the police. It's corrupted the courts. It's filled up the prisons. And it's made the problems worse, just like it did with alcohol. But when you start doing a situation where you're going to start intruding into people's phones, and of course, Apple has always talked about how they're all about privacy, right? So they're going to go into people's phones, and then they're going to use some program to start looking at what is on your phone and making judgment calls about whether or not this is child pornography and then notifying the authorities on you. Well, we see the problem there, don't we? One of the first events where they were starting to use artificial intelligence to do crime monitoring. I'll never forget. They were watching people and making judgments about whether or not a crime was being committed. And the AI was watching a guy who goes up to a car and he circles the car a couple of times. And then he bends down and you don't see him. And he's doing something under the car. And so it calls the police on him. Well, it turns out what he was doing was trying to change a tire. And the AI thought that he was trying to steal the car or steal hubcaps or something like that. Call the police. Now, we know how dangerous it is to SWAT people, right? And we just had an incident not too long ago where you had some kids who wanted the handle at Tennessee that some guy had. And he wasn't going to sell it to them. And they were desperate. They wanted to have it. So they started harassing him. They finally SWAT teamed him. And it wound up, the SWAT team gets there. They're loaded for bear. They think that it's something very dangerous. They believe their life is threatened. And, of course, they've all been taught that if they have a feeling that they're in danger, they can shoot first and ask questions later. They have a license to kill. They become James Bond. You know, no questions asked. You kill anybody that's there if you feel threatened. That's the way they've been trained. And so if we're going to have a situation where, and that may not be the case if somebody's going to investigate child porn. They may not go in there with guns drawn. Or maybe they will, depending. I don't know. But that's just the first instance of this. What else are they going to look for on your phone? What other kinds of inferences are they going to draw? Are they going to decide that you are a dangerous domestic extremist because you're Christian or whatever, or because they don't like your religious or political beliefs? They think you're a sovereign citizen because you talk about the founding fathers or something like that? And so then they send the SWAT team in for you there? I mean, I see a lot of problems with this. And that's really what this has become. And if you go back and you look at, and I've talked about it many, many times, the series of three slides that were part of some of the cache of documents that Snowden put out there. One of them was about Big Brother, and it was from the NSA, and it showed Steve Jobs and the iPhone. The very first slide showed the iconic 1984 Super Bowl commercial, and it said, who would have thought in 1984, because that's when they introduced the Mac, and that's when they ran that Super Bowl commercial from Ridley Scott, said, who would have thought in 1984, next slide, that this would be Big Brother, and they show Steve Jobs holding up an iPhone next to his face. And the third slide shows people lined up at the Apple store and says, and the people would line up to buy it. The NSA laughing at people because we are buying our Big Brother phone. And that's what it is. And now it's really openly becoming that. And so, yeah, they're channeling everybody into that type of thing. All I can say is that most of my life, I did not have a cellular phone. I can still remember when a cellular phone was a novelty. I remember when we had a bag phone that was several watts, I think probably really high power. We had a bag phone that sat between the two seats and plugged into the cigarette lighter. It was a big, bulky thing. We were able to survive by having a landline, and actually people were able to survive without even having phones for a while. I mean, there's other ways to communicate with people. So it is a nuisance. These things can be a convenience, but they can also be a spy device. So yeah, they're trying to corral us and make us dependent on these phones. That's one of the key things. Make sure that you're not too tied to this thing. I have a question. If you film another Q&A anytime soon, so that's what we're doing now, what do you think of former Overstock CEO and libertarian Patrick Byrne? Honestly, I don't know anything about him. I do know that he was involved in some of the Stop the Steal stuff. I know that I think it was after I left that Alex interviewed him or something, perhaps. Maybe it was before I left. I'm not sure, but I didn't watch the interview. Curious to hear your thoughts because I can't determine what I think of Byrne. I liked him at first, but now I wonder. He appears to be making a business for himself out of election fraud. Well, I won't say anything about him because, again, I haven't watched what he had to say. He was in on one of these meetings, was what I recall, and it's what they were talking about. But I don't know what he's been doing since then. Let me just say this about all the election fraud stuff. It's not a surprise, is it? We knew this was going to happen because Trump did the lockdown mail-in election. But what I'm concerned about is that these people are not on the critical path right now. Just like talking about Wuhan and focusing on Wuhan. That distracts us from the key thing. Yes, it's good to discredit Fauci because he's now, you know, the emperor who's lying to us. And so it is good to discredit Fauci. However, if you talk too much about this Wuhan virus thing, you're going to get people scared to death. That's the whole purpose of a lot of this stuff. And you're creating and sowing panic. And that's why I didn't want to talk about it at InfoWars. I wanted to focus on no lockdown, no masks, no vaccines, all that stuff. That was what I wanted to be the focus. Because it's pretty obvious that they were taking us to where we are right now and where we're about to go. But the thing about the election is, first of all, that's not the key issue before us right now. You know, number one, I don't care about Trump. And a president isn't going to save us. The election corruption affects everything. It affected the Senate. So we turned over the Senate because we didn't do anything to change it before the Georgia runoff. Why? Because we're totally focused on Trump. So then we turned over the Senate to the Democrats as well, right? So why are we doing that? It's a distraction. He is a distraction. This whole process with Mike Lindell, Mike Flynn is a distraction. And to the extent that this guy is doing it, it is a distraction. There's always been election corruption, a lot of it. I've talked about this. I've talked about my participation in it, how they've got a lock on the ballot, the two major parties, how they have a lock on the debates. And then it goes through the voting process, which has been very corrupt, the reporting process, which can also be rigged. The electronic voting took it to another level. The mail-in voting took it to a level as well, another level. There are so many different aspects of this, but what do? They talk about Trump, and they talk about Dominion. Their focus is ridiculously narrow. They're not going to solve anything by focusing on Dominion and on Trump. They're not serious about any of this stuff. It is nothing other than a distraction and a misdirection to keep us from doing anything about what has been happening to us for 510 days. It was a distraction then, and it's still a distraction. And we've got to grow up and get over the idea that we're going to have some savior in Washington who's going to fix it. Let me tell you, even if that were true, that's not Trump. He's not your savior. He'll never be worth anything. He is a traitor. Just thought, how do we get illegal immigrants educated on the Declaration of Independence, Constitution, etc.? Is there anyone able to track these people and present them with some truth? Well, I think the key thing is to get them out of the government schools. If we could do anything to help them in terms of, thinking on their own, but that's one of the reasons that they're bringing in people who are economically poor and who are economic refugees instead of political refugees. There's a big difference of the people that I got to know in Florida whose parents had escaped living under Castro. They had an understanding of what was happening. They had an understanding of that political orientation. And you didn't need to explain to them the difference between communism and freedom. But the people that are coming in now are people that are here simply for pragmatic reasons. And the Democrats are bringing them in for a number of reasons. They're bringing them in because they're going to be dependent voters for them. The Republicans want cheap labor. And so they're being exploited by both of these groups. And they don't have a political orientation that they're really focused on. They're just trying to survive. And so they are ripe to be misled in these schools. And you start bringing people here who don't know anything about American history, and you start telling them 1619 and critical race theory and all this other stuff and how horrible America is, they're going to be a very effective fifth column to push back against us. So it's a very, very bad situation. But the core issue is not even the people who are coming in. The core issue are the schools, because the schools are doing that to our own children, children who are already here, who are born here, whose parents have been here for multiple generations. You could take somebody whose grandparents came in from Cuba, and those grandkids are now going through these schools, learning how wonderful Cuba is and how we need to have a system like Cuba. And if the parents don't know that, that's what they're going to wind up turning into. let's see. Is there any way we're able to track these people and present them with some truth? The problem is the media, the problem is the entertainment industry and the schools. And those three are controlling what they have to see. And if you want to know how effective that is, just take a look at what's happened to this country in the last year. Dear Mr. Knight, I've heard your show a few times and I've noticed you don't tell people to go out and buy food and water and supplies for the alleged upcoming devastation on America. Or possibly I didn't hear you say anything about it. Mike Adams tells everyone to buy up food and water, vitamins and supplements and gold and silver, and then tells us that the government's going to take possession of our homes, that, by the way, it's where we store all these supplies. I'm confused. And I'm sure many others are as well. Cindy. Well, here's the thing. I've mentioned him already a couple of times during the night. I think we ought to be wise about this. I don't think we need to be paranoid about it. There's a lot of different ways that you can buy and store up supplies that are inexpensive and things that you can do on your own. And he's got some old styles like pemmican and things like that that you can make yourself that last for a very long time, that are nutritious and very, very inexpensive. So you don't have to go out and buy very expensive storable food and things like that. But you can do that if you're in a hurry. That's fine. You know, I'm not saying that's a bad thing to do. But again, my orientation on all of this is that just like it is with the investment information and preparation information and what is coming, you know, are we going to be monitored and shut out of society? There's a good chance that all that stuff is going to happen. But I don't think we need to be afraid of that. I think we need to take the longer view, and we need to make sure that we have a good relationship with God. And if we do that, we can really kind of weather these types of things. And God really does provide for the people who follow him. He really does. So just question yourself. You know, do you have a relationship with God? If you do, things can get rough, but you're not going to be without. That's really where my trust is, and I hope that is where your trust is as well, because as Zero Hedge points out, nobody's going to get out of this alive, right? The headline that they have on all of their articles is Zero Hedge. On a long enough timeline, the survival rate for everyone drops to zero. That's the message of 2020, isn't it? All these people who think that if they wear masks and if they get their Trump shots and all, they're going to live forever. You might live a little bit longer if you do certain things. I don't think either one of those things are going to help you, but you might live a little bit longer, or maybe you won't live at all because you'll be so fearful and afraid to live that you squander the time that you have. I remember the very beginning of this, there was a couple in the UK that were in their mid-80s, and they were just furious about this. They said, I'm not going to lock down for a year. I don't have that many years left. And even if I live, you know, for another 10, 15 years or something, I'm not necessarily going to be able to travel or do anything. I probably won't have the health to do that. You know, our life is very short. We shouldn't be wasting it in lockdown. So, last one here that I've got, and then we'll do a little bit of news here for the rest of the program. Love the show, David. Just like to know where those news stories you report are from. Trying to find them and follow and like them. Keep fighting for the truth. Well, I try to give the sources, you know, when I report the stories I don't like to, I like when I, for two reasons, I want to make sure that if somebody got something wrong, people know where I got the source from, and we can always correct it from that. But I also don't want to try to plagiarize anybody, so I usually mention where it's coming from, but we don't have it up as an article, I understand that. Where do I get the news stories? And as I pointed out, I've got a long list of about 20 sites that I go through and I look at the headlines. And surprising, there's usually a lot of overlap between them. So I look at a couple of news aggregation sites, and System Free Press and Revolver and some others like that. I look at Free Press, Free Thought Project. I look at some conservative sites like Breitbart, although they've just gotten so partisan. It's rare that I find that they focus really kind of on just border issues now, and again, so partisan that they've lost a lot of objectivity. They become big vaccine cheerleaders as well. So then there's some other sites I look at for medical information, or things that are happening in society with the cultural revolt. LifeSite News is actually very good about that. Children's Health Defense Fund is good with information about vaccines and health. Vaccine Impact, I would also recommend. Zero Hedge has got a lot of stuff. And I still look at Drudge Report because I want to know what the left is doing. And so that's part of my leftist group. I have a lot of sites that are people that I disagree with. I just call them mainstream media. So that'd be, CNN and Fox News and MSNBC and, those types of people, The Hill. I look at what they're having to say about stuff because a lot of times that gives you the best understanding of where the government is coming from, because those are really the people who are the surrogates, the spokespersons for the government. They're being fed by the CIA, the military-industrial complex, and the Democrats, that information, so you can know where these people want to go with this stuff. They'll typically tip you off as to what the Democrats are going to be doing in a few days, cheering them on to do it. So just a wide variety of things. It takes a lot of time, and there's not any one particular site that I would recommend. They all change fairly rapidly, and they all specialize in different aspects too. Then again, I find that you can find a lot of information in terms of what is breaking news. You can find that sometimes even faster on Twitter. So, Twitter is in the early days when I first got on about 10 years ago. That's all I used it for, was just to look at news sites. And whenever I'd find news sites that I agreed with or disagreed with, I'd put them on the list and follow them. Now I use it a little bit differently. But we're going to take a quick break. That's the end of the questions. We're going to come back and we'll talk a little bit about what's going on with vaccines and what's going on with schools, because those two things are starting to converge as we have Fauci warning us about a variant that is worse than Delta. The Lambda is coming. I guess Typhoid Mary, we could say, had a little Lambda. We'll be right back.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project, to make sure the commoners own nothing, and the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you.
Hear news now at APSRadioNews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
You know, we have Fauci now dialing up the fear to 11, is the way that Zero Hedge puts it, talking about the Lambda strain. It's going to be more resistant to the vaccine. It's going to have a huge viral load here. Yeah, right. How does he know that? You know, he said that the Delta variant cases are rising in very steep fashion. And so he's predicting we're going to have 200,000 cases per day. Do you remember back on that Friday the 13th when they said there's going to be 2.2 million people who died? Nobody's ever held him accountable to that. As a matter of fact, Trump even said, I saved 2 million lives. Because from March until just before the election, they'd only run up a total of 200,000 with their statistics. And again, I don't believe their statistics. I believe that they're misattributing these things. I believe that they didn't do autopsies. They counted people who died within 30 days of testing positive, even if they didn't have symptoms. Even if they ran their motorcycle into a wall, they were counted as a COVID death. They've been rigging this thing upside one side and down the other. This is pure conjecture. Maybe we should start referring to Fauci as a conjecturer, right? There's no stats on who is dying, who's getting hospitalized, or who's the most vaccine hesitant. Of course, no statistics. They did say, however, that only 28.5% of the black community have gotten the COVID vaccine. Well, good for them. Good for them. Smartest of us all. They don't trust government, and neither should you. While the Biden administration is now framing this as a pandemic of the unvaccinated, McClatchy notes that recent data shows that vaccinated people who still get infected with a Delta variant also have high viral loads and can spread to others. Again, just yesterday, we had a listener who asked a very good question. How do they know what the viral load is? I mean, we've been using these PCR tests, right? And the PCR tests don't measure the viral load. They take any viral remnant and they magnify it by a trillion times at a cycle threshold of 40. How do you know what the viral load is? You've been keeping these statistics. You've been doing these. You've been doing these tests. Are you testing to see that it's the Delta or the Lambda variant? This is all pure BS. There's no data. They've even said we're changing the recommendations on masks and so forth, but we don't have any data to show you. They're not even pretending anymore because it's just gotten too complicated for them to lie. You know, they've been caught in one lie after the other. Looking at their own statistics, we can show how they're lying about things. And yet, they don't even have to show any statistics or provide any data. They just tell you what to do now. That's where we are. Fauci said, the data shows that people infected with the Delta variant have got viral levels about 1,000 times higher in quantity than were reported in people who were infected with the Alpha variant. Again. So what? Even if that were true, so what? Is it deadlier? Have you seen the number of hospitalizations and deaths go up? No. Even if what he was saying was true, even if it is spreading more, and we've had some people say, well, if you have a virus, you would expect to have it change in the sense that it would be more transmissible but less deadly. That would be a natural progression that you would expect to see as the things vary over time. There is no way that they can support this. They're just trying to scare people. Fauci says he fears that there will be more strains that'll be even deadlier, right? As I retweeted that yesterday, I said, is that a threat? Is he threatening to do something? Or is that fear-mongering? Or is it the fact that he knows, because as many people have talked about it, ADE, you know, where the virus... The vaccine does not really kill the virus, but actually it helps the virus to survive. Not survive, it's not alive, but to propagate and to vary. The virus will continue to smolder through the fall and into the winter, giving it ample chance to get a variant, which quite frankly we're very lucky that these vaccines that we now have do very well against the variants, said Fauci. Does this remind you of some kind of a horoscope thing? It's total BS. All of this stuff is BS. It's unbelievable. Let me look at your palm here. Yeah, that's it. There may be an Omega death variant coming, says Kyle Becker. If we don't lock down and wear masks forever, and if we get vaccinated, get 15 booster shots, and never go outside, and maybe not still, let's be on the safe side. Let's do all of this anyway. even if it destroys the country. Am I doing this right? Like I said yesterday, you know, Jeremy Clarkson said, this is it. You know, these communists at the SAGE, you know, the Scientific Advisory Group in the UK, these communists at SAGE are going to tell us that this is going to last forever. So let's just forget about this. Let's go outside, live our lives. If we die, we die. And now Rand Paul is taking the lead on this. He wrote an op-ed on Fox News by the title, Resist. They can't arrest us all. And I'm glad that Rand Paul is taking that. It's finally time for somebody to do this. As I said before, I'm not happy with what he had to say yesterday about the vaccines, cheering the vaccines. But again, when you look at what Rand Paul is now doing in terms of exposing Fauci as a fraud, again, I don't want to get caught up into this Wuhan thing. I think that's a distraction. It also pushes fear-mongering. This, however, is exactly what needs to be done, what Rand Paul is doing right now. And so we should applaud him on this, because this is exactly what needs to be done. It should have been done 510 days ago. But better late than never. They can't arrest us all, he said. It's time for Americans to resist Pelosi and the petty tyrants. He said they can't keep your kids home from school. They can't keep every government building closed, although I've got a long list of ones that they should keep closed. We don't have to accept the mandates, the lockdowns, the harmful policies of the petty tyrants and the feckless bureaucrats. We can simply say no, not again. Speaker Nancy Pelosi, you will not arrest or stop me or anyone on my staff from doing our jobs. We have all either had COVID, had the vaccine, or been offered the vaccine. We will make our own health choices. We will not show you a passport. We will not wear a mask. We will not be forced into random screening and testing so you can continue your drunk with power reign over the Capitol. President Biden, we will not accept your agency's mandates or your reported move towards a lockdown. No one should follow the CDC's anti-science mask mandates. And if you want to shut down federal agencies again, some of which are not even back to work fully, I will stop every bill coming through the Senate with an amendment to cut their funding if they don't come to work. No more. We're not going to be held hostage by local bureaucrats and union bosses for the schools. We will not allow you to do more harm to our children again this year. Children are not any more at risk from COVID than they are from the seasonal flu. But see, that's what Fauci and the CDC have been trying to do for every year, for several years, scare everybody into getting the flu shot. Now they're scaring everybody so much that they're begging that the government mandate it for other people, not only taking it themselves, but mandating it for you and I. Every adult who works in schools has either had the vaccine or had a chance to. There's no reason for mask mandates, part-time schools, or any lockdown measures. Do I sound fed up to you? Well, it's because I am. Good. I'm glad. Even though it took 510 days, I'm glad that he's fed up now. And he is on point. This is the point. We don't need to talk about Wuhan. We don't need to talk about vaccines. We don't need to talk about any of that stuff. We need to just say, you're not going to shut our lives down. End of story. You don't have the authority. We're not going to live under a medical dictatorship, because that's what this is. It's a bunch of dictators telling us what to do. And he's a doctor. He knows exactly the fact that these people don't possess all science and all knowledge, and that they are very much interested in what they're telling people to do, with a financial interest, by the way. I have been telling everyone for a year now that Dr. Fauci and other public health officials were not following science. I've been proven right time and time again. I'm not the only one who is fed up. He says where he goes places, people congratulate him for opposing this. He said, I think the tide has turned, and folks, it's got to turn fast. And I'm glad that, again, 2 days ago, he's applauding the vaccine, but I'm glad that he's on point now. He said, the tide has turned. More and more people are willing to stand up. I see stories from across the country of parents standing up to teacher unions and school boards. I see members of Congress refusing to comply with petty tyrant Pelosi. We are at a moment of truth and at a crossroads. Will we allow these people to use fear and propaganda to do further harm to our society, to our economy, to our children? Or will we stand together and say, absolutely not, not this time. I choose freedom. Good for him. Well said. We need to have somebody who's going to take point on this. You're not going to get this from feckless Trump, just staring in the mirror at himself. FAA has slapped Boeing 737 MAX with new safety directive for faulty control switches. Why do I mention this? Again, they've had more than 2 years of back and forth shut down the flights from these 737 MAXs. They had two planes that crashed, killed about 530 people. A drop in the bucket, considering the number of people that, and that was over a period of about 5 months. Two crashes over 5 months, 534, I think it was, people died. But we've had 12,000 people die in 6 months, and nobody cares. You didn't hear, as I've said before, you didn't hear the rhetoric from the FAA saying, well, you know, hey, look, airline traffic is so safe, and it is. You know, you have very few plane crashes. They didn't say, look at how many people flew on a 737 MAX and didn't die. No, it was unacceptable for 538 people to die in two incidents. And it should be way unacceptable a long time ago to have 12,000 people reported dead and 500,000 people injured. But it isn't. And so the way they run the airline safety, former employees of Boeing are still voicing their concern that the MAX jet is still not fixed after it was grounded for 2 years following just two deadly crashes that involved malfunctioning flight control systems again. But when you look at Fauci, this article off of LifeSite News that has been put out there looking at his connection to remdesivir. Again.
Show me the money!
Jerry, you better yell! Show me the money!
Show me the money!
Yeah, we're going to show you the money. Actually, we don't know exactly how much they paid him, but let me tell you something. There is smoking guns all over the place with Fauci. This guy is going to go down in history as one of the most corrupt liars ever. And somewhere, somebody is going to find his money stash and expose this guy for what he is and send him to jail for the blood on his hands. Did Fauci knowingly fast-track approval of a drug with deadly COVID-like side effects? Well, yes, he did, and that drug is called remdesivir. Just the opposite of what we're seeing with the Boeing 737 MAX. An international legal group heard testimony that remdesivir is one of four drugs in a clinical trial for Ebola in 2018 and was dropped from the study before the study was over because it was so harmful. It had the highest death rate of all the drugs being tested. And they don't even go into this article. They didn't even go into the fact that Fauci had tried to make this an approved drug for AIDS, and he couldn't make the case. Then he puts it in, tries to do it for Ebola. It was so deadly, they stopped it early. Remdesivir was one of four drugs in clinical trial for Ebola in 2018, dropped before it was over because it had the highest death rate of all the drugs being tested. It was sponsored by the NIAID. That's Fauci's thing that he's head of, the National Institute for Allergy and Infectious Diseases. As chief medical advisor to the president on COVID, he must have known that remdesivir had a 50% death rate compared to a 35% death rate for the other Ebola drugs in the trial, and that it had serious side effects, including at least one drug. It led to one death, I should say. It led to the drug being pulled and the research on it being abandoned. Now, Gilead is a big pharmaceutical company, and by all appearances, because Fauci has pushed this so many times for so many different things, it looked like he desperately wanted to get this thing through for something. And he did. He ran it through. And then after he sold billions of dollars worth of this stuff in the U.S. and in the EU, not the U.S., nobody in the U.S., nobody at the FDA, nobody at the NIH is going to take a look at this twice. But in the EU, they looked at it a second time. They said, wait a minute, we've been had. And they stopped using this thing. Did Anthony Fauci know about the death rate of remdesivir? Oh, you better believe it. And now, is he going to push this on the masses? Said one of the people involved in the study. His last name is Artis. He told this to the Corona Investigative Committee organized by German-American lawyer Rainer Fuhlmich, who specializes in the prosecution of fraudulent global corporations. Well, he's in the right area. You want some fraudulent global corporations and bureaucrats? We'll take a look at Gilead and Fauci. Artis said that Fauci cited only the Ebola trial and a study from Remdesivir's manufacturer, Gilead, on just 53 COVID-19 patients when he pronounced it as the standard of care. It's the standard of care here. Leading contender to fight the pandemic virus. Gilead's cohort study, conducted for compassionate use on patients with COVID-19, was only 28 days long. 28 days long. It reported that 61 patients treated with a drug, of them, 8 were excluded for missing information. 32, that is 60%, of the 53 remaining patients reported adverse events, including liver enzymes, diarrhea, rash, kidney function impairment. As a matter of fact, when Trump was put in and they said that, oh, he tested positive for this, they gave him remdesivir. And I kind of wondered, I said, are they just telling people that he had remdesivir? But then they casually mentioned a few days later, they said, well, we're doing tests on his liver. I said, oh, they did give him remdesivir because that was one of the key things. And we knew that. We knew that at the time. We knew that over a year ago. 12 patients had serious adverse events, including multiple organ dysfunction syndrome, septic shock, acute kidney injury, and hypotension, low blood pressure. Now, this is 12 people out of 53 because in the study. Artists said many baffling symptoms that doctors began attributing to COVID, the virus, were in fact side effects of remdesivir used to treat it, including death, right? Because, as I've said before, you look at what is happening to people, the people that go in the hospital get very sick with a respiratory illness. It is financially incentivized malpractice. You're going to shut off a lot of things that are cheap, effective, that we know about. You're going to put them on very expensive and dangerous things that are going to have bad side effects. And I think that's one of the reasons why you've seen the death rate chalk up for the people in the hospitals. They're giving them the wrong treatment. We're going to look back on this and we're going to say this is the equivalent of a leeching people, right? But they get paid. Artists said, again, that it was they were attributing to COVID what remdesivir was actually doing. Fauci knew it for 2 years before he mandated that this drug, that it was deadly. I call it Fauci genocide. They said, this is COVID. Everybody's dying. But they were the ones who killed them. Again, it's medical malpractice. Remdesivir's rise to the top of the COVID therapeutics is marked by many odd favors and chances. Just 2 days after COVID was declared the cause, this virus, the SARS-CoV-2, on January the 8th, researchers from Gilead and the University of North Carolina, again, and Vanderbilt, published a study reporting that remdesivir could inhibit the related MERS coronavirus in both test tubes and mice. Just 2 days. So they identify the virus, and 2 days later, they already know that it's effective. Boy, that's warp speed, isn't it? Yeah, it's exactly what we saw with all this stuff. 2 weeks later, doctors treated the first confirmed patient with COVID-19 in the U.S. with remdesivir. It had never been authorized for any condition. They published it in the New England Journal of Medicine that the 35-year-old patient had survived. We treated one person, 35 years, and look at this, he survived. But the reality is that 35-year-olds had a infection fatality rate, according to their own statistics, of 0.05%. In other words, he already had a 99.95% chance of survival. The NIH announced on April the 29th that an interim analysis from a large-scale placebo-controlled clinical trial found that remdesivir reduced the median time that severely ill hospitalized COVID-19 patients took to recover from 15 days to 11 days. And on the basis of that, which was never the basis for a therapeutic, on the basis of that, Fauci said, it's the standard of care. Now, one of the things they don't mention in this article is the fact that there was a study that was put up on the WHO site, taken down within hours, and it said, no, it's very dangerous, and it doesn't do anything. A lot of side effects. And, of course, it's very expensive. $3,100 for a course of this versus $3 for a course of ivermectin. So they took it down within a couple of hours. Within 1 week, Fauci put out his study that had not been peer-reviewed and pronounced it the standard of care. Many scientists are baffled by the meteoric rise of remdesivir, which showed weak benefits at best in October, just after the FDA granted the drug final approval. A WHO study found the drug didn't decrease mortality or hospital stays. And then, of course, a number of case reports describe its side effects. One published in February describes a 36-year-old hospitalized COVID patient who developed a slow heartbeat after taking the drug and then recovered when it was discontinued. Considering the frequent use of remdesivir in patients with COVID-19, physicians should be aware of this possible adverse effect, especially because, you know, this spike that they're injecting people with affects your heart. Another case reports a 64-year-old whose remdesivir treatment was stopped with evidence of liver injury from the drug. And yet, Fauci says, a third Cronus vaccine shot for people with weakened immune systems is a very high priority. Just buy more vaccines. I think we ought to have a billboard. You know, as Chick-fil-A puts up the black and white spotted cows and they're painting the sign, eat more chicken, right? I think we should have one of Fauci up on a, you know, in a white lab coat. Well, maybe some black spots on it. It could say, buy more, M-O-R, buy more Vax, V-A-X. Because that's all he is. He's just a salesman for this stuff. Where is he getting paid?
Show me the money!
Yeah, who's giving him the money?
Show me the money!
Come on, let's expose this guy. Let's find out what's going on with him. And to give you an idea, look at Sydney, Australia. They've got everybody locked down. They don't have any reason for doing this. This is all the zero COVID mindset, right? They say, well, we got a couple of hundred people who tested positive, maybe asymptomatic, but we're going to lock everybody down. But here's your chance to get out because they've only got a 13% vaccination rate there. That's why they're giving them the truncheon all the time. It's martial law. They're saying they're making an offer that they can't refuse. It's just a mafia. Australian authorities say they could ease the lockdown that demands that Sydney's 5 million people stay home until the end of August if half the population is vaccinated. So, take the shot and I'll let you out. If you don't, we're going to keep you all locked down. We're going to keep you under arrest. Take a look at what's happening to the cruise lines. We've got Carnival Cruise Lines now is going to have, not only do you have to be vaccinated, but you also have to wear masks. And you also have to go through pre-cruise testing as well. Even though they require that 95% of the ship's passenger and crew be vaccinated, you will still have to wear masks. You will still have to get tested. Celebrity Cruise Line has just had, even though everybody was vaccinated, they had two passengers who tested COVID, positive for COVID. So they've got everybody, you have to be vaccinated to get on the cruise, and then they go around testing everybody because they're so paranoid about everything. It's not that deadly, especially if you got a treatment that you're allowed to have. The only thing that's deadly is the treatments that they're putting people through. But they're still so paranoid about that. You got to be vaccinated on. They test everybody. They find two people who don't have any symptoms, and now they're freaking out on Celebrity Cruise Lines. Stay away from these things. Go instead to the Sturgis Bike Rally because it's now back. Starting today, Sturgis, South Dakota. Last year, it was down a little bit. They usually have 500,000 people. It was down to 460,000. The local politicians and health dictators tried to stop it last year, but the businesses said there's no way you're going to stop this. It's a small town. They've only got, you know, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 people in the town, and that's all of their business for the year. Yeah, it's a community under 7,000 people. So the city tried to tamp it down. And the business said, no, you're not going to do it. And the bikers came anyway. And nothing happened. Nothing happened. They tried to say, well, I think that we've gone through and we've done this analysis. And I think we've got 500 or 600 cases that we can, out of a 500,000? Any big deal about that? Who cares? They're riding around outdoors for the most part. This year, instead of the usual 500,000, they expect more than 700,000 people to show up. Nobody wore masks last year. One person is coming from Hungary. Oh, how did they do that? Because the U.S. is not allowing anybody to fly into the country from other countries unless they're Americans. Well, this particular individual outsmarted Biden and his minions. He flew down to Costa Rica Stayed there for a couple of weeks and then went to South Dakota. He said, I really missed it last year. I hope a million people show up this year. Typical, again, is about 500,000. They expect about 700,000. And so a tale of two different approaches to this. You know, we have, by the way, when I talked yesterday about the Atlantic magazine, saying the unvaccinated should not fly. The Atlantic magazine is owned by Steve Jobs' widow. She is the sixth richest person in the world. She owns two private jets, and she has the audacity to tell you that you don't have the right to fly, to publish an article that says people who are exercising their individual rights do not deserve to be a protected class. You're the protected class, you elitist snob. Yeah, this Steve Jobs' widow. She went to the Wharton School of Finance. She went to Stanford. She worked for Merrill Lynch. She worked for Goldman Sachs. She married one of the richest men in the world, Steve Jobs. As Breitbart pointed out, she is the establishment. This is the establishment telling you that you can't have a life. This is somebody who owns multiple private jets telling you you're not going to be allowed to fly if you don't get a vaccine. And, of course, it's not just flying. It's going to be every form of transportation. Biden is going to try to do this. That's why that essay from Rand Paul is exactly what we have to do. As I said yesterday, if we do not stand up at this point in time, if we allow these people to keep adding chains to our arms and legs and restrictions on our lives, and if we allow these chains to harden into place, it's going to be virtually impossible to get rid of them. And we're going to go into a new dark ages. Now is the time to push back on this. Thank you for listening. That's it for today's program.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.